It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Great panel for you. Philip Elmer DeWitt is here. He's the king of Apple journalism. And we're going to talk about the 10th anniversary of the iPhone. It's tomorrow. We might even revisit that amazing announcement. Also, from Clayton Fox, from Fox and Friends, Clayton Morris is here. We're going to talk about the Russian hacking and a whole lot more. We got a great show ahead for you on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT This Week in Tech, episode 596, recorded Sunday, January 8th, 2017. President Zuck. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Visit squarespace.com and enter the offer code TWIT for a free trial and 10% off. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 200-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidate fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT. And by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter TWIT. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/TWIT and entering the promo code TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the latest tech news. I am thrilled, as always, with our panel. It's so much fun to get friends together to talk about tech news. Old friends, Clayton Morris here from Fox and Friends and a tech journalist for years. Hi, Clayton. Great to see you. We haven't seen you in a long time. You had a baby since I saw you last.
Yeah, I had a baby. I had a food baby.
A food baby? What's it? Wait a minute. What is that coming out of your ear?
I tried tonight, instead of wearing the giant cans, which, you know, when you're doing TWIT and it's 3 hours long,
it squeezes your forehead together.
So I put on the AirPods tonight.
Are they working?
They work great. Yeah.
I'll have to start using them.
They work great. So
you're not using it for the mic. Just for the
No. So yeah. I've got my Rode podcaster mic, but then I just to hear the crew there.
Nice.
So
nice.
Yeah.
Also with
working
us,
great.
The dean of Mac journalism, Philip Elmer DeWitt. He's also wearing them, and he's dressed for the occasion because he is in the snowy north. You're in New England.
This is what we wear in Western Mass so that people don't know that we're using AirPods.
He's wearing his
so
Elmer.
So people just see you talking Elmer, to yourself as you're walking down the street.
Elmer Fudd hat. Yeah. Paul Allen was wearing his Elmer Fudd hat. I don't know if you saw it on the Seahawks game yesterday. Paul Allen, one of the founders of Microsoft, was caught on camera during the game. Wearing an Elmer Fudd hat and sitting behind a Lenovo ThinkPad. So I don't know how the NFL feels, but I'm guessing the NFL doesn't mind if the owners don't use Surface Pro.
How is that an Elmer Fudd hat?
This is an earlier game. I can't find the game from
last night.
It's
the ear flaps, right? That's what
Yeah.
Well, and all of the announcers, whether it was on Fox or CBS, they could never, I think, was it famously during one of the playoff games last
year?
Right, they call them iPads.
Yeah.
Actually, no, last year during the Super Bowl or it was during one of the championship games, the Surfaces broke down, remember?
Right.
On the sidelines. And that was like the first time that the announcers got it right. They said, their Surface.
Microsoft was hoping they'd say iPads.
Right. That's the one time they nailed it. They're broken.
Here's a picture from last night of Paul Allen. And he's still got his ThinkPad. And I don't know what he was so concerned about because it looked like, there we go. I've put my Elmer Fudd hat on now, too.
There you go.
So we're be very quiet.
They won't mistake you for a deer with that on.
I have to apologize. We wanted to have Kara Swisher on the phone from Recode. She's been really writing some interesting stuff about the transition, about the tech execs going to meet Donald Trump in the Trump Tower and so forth. Some very, I think, acerbic stuff. But we couldn't get her on because of the flooding in Northern California. Her cable internet is out. So she's trying to get, she's on the phone with Comcast, hoping she can get on the show. That is the biggest joke of the day, because as we all know, that's an hour, right? 2 hours, 3 hours. That could be forever. So we'll reschedule, get Kara on. But we did, before the show, we talked to her via phone, and you'll see why we aren't going to have her on the show. But I thought we'd just drop this phone call in, because I did thank her. Yeah, we might as well keep the hat on, Philip. I did thank her for what she's been writing lately in Recode, and this is what she had to say. You have been doing, your writing has been so awesome, Kara, of late. You've been freed of the chains of corporate, which is ironic because you work for AOL, but you've been freed of the chains.
No, I never worked for AOL.
No. Well, who owns Recode now? Vox.
Vox Media.
Vox. So Vox is not AOL. Vox isn't saying anything. They're letting you do whatever you want.
Well, so did everybody else. I think this particular, no one ever really told me what to do.
I think you're inspired. You're inspired. That's what it is.
Yes. That's different. Yeah. No one has ever once told me what to do, but I think it's just a really important time, and tech seems so ridiculously silent about what's happening, and it's irritating after all these years to have to listen to them yammer on about their independence and innovation and how they disrupt everything, and then they sit here quietly while things that are supposed to be near and dear to their core values are being attacked, and not saying anything and trying to be practical. And so on some level, you get the sense that they happen to like the power, and they happen to like the money, and they happen to like their status, and don't want to speak up for core values of what Silicon Valley represents. So that's all. I mean,
they
breaks. Yeah, they like the tax breaks. They like everything else. And so employees feel this way. I get calls from, I was just at a big company last week, and you know, a pretty high-ranking executive under one of the executives who went to the Trump meeting that took place with Trump and tech leaders literally thanked me, said, "We are very upset that they're not sticking up for what we think is important." And this was someone not far from the top.
Do you think they struggle? Do you think people like Tim Cook struggle with this because at the same time they feel some fiduciary responsibility as a CEO of a publicly held company?
Well, sure, but they could say that. They could, you know, the issue is that it doesn't matter. They're not going to escape scrutiny if this guy decides to want to tweet about one of them. You know what I mean? Like, look at what happened to the Boeing executive. And so I think, you know, he didn't feel that way about encryption. He certainly stood up for what
Good
I
point.
Thought was a really strongly
Good
thing. So he seems to have a voice, and they certainly stand up for the gay issue in Indiana. They stand up for a lot of things, but in this case, you know, they feel, I don't know why they can't just make normal statements of, and it doesn't mean to be opposed. They don't have to be, they don't have to say, "I hate you." They can engage, like Tim has said to his staff. By the way, Tim Cook's the only executive who went to that meeting who actually made a statement to his staff about it, or in any way that could become public, which was astonishing because, as you know, Leo, these people never stop wanting to talk or say things, and suddenly they are rendered silent before and after the meeting. And I found that fascinating because, as you know, they never stop talking and never stop yammering your ear off about their values. So, you know, I think, yes, sure, he has fiduciary duties, but it doesn't mean he can't say, "We think immigration is important. We think... we think, you know, fair immigration is important. We think diversity is important. We think a lot of things are important that you have said things about that disturb us. There's nothing wrong with that." So, sorry, I'll get off my soapbox.
So, Kara, thank you, and we'll get you on as soon as she's now traveling. She's going to Germany and then D.C., so I don't know when we're going to get her back on, and we'll get her on again as soon as possible. Kara's always a welcome member of the panel. And I don't know if she has an Elmer Fudd hat, but if she does... Yours is authentic, I have to say, Philip. That looks like
it's an aviator hat, actually. Yeah. I got it for Christmas.
Oh, I have one of those, too.
I think every time we're on, we end up doing some sort of a costume party. I think last time I was on, we were nude at some point. Weren't we naked at
that
some
That actually made it to the best of. We played that last week, the best of, with you in the Chewy mask. That dates it, by the way, because that was when that viral video was all the rage.
Right.
Oh, those things don't have, they have the shelf life of fish. Anyway, yeah, what were we talking about?
We're talking about CES.
Oh, CES. So this is the day CES ends in Las Vegas, and you asked the most important question, Clayton.
Or no, I think Philip did.
Philip, you asked the most important question.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
How many of us went to CES? Zip. Zilch.
And you heard crickets.
Nothing. Is that because we're the lucky ones, or is that because we're the left behind?
I think the lucky ones. And I think also, you mentioned fear of missing out. I always get that for like 5 minutes. And then when I see that everyone has to pack up right after Christmas or right after New Year, and when you're just trying to get your life back in order and then have to go to Las Vegas and spend a week there and walk nonstop, it always feels like you know what's going on when you know less of what's going on when you're there than by the time you get back to your hotel room or when you're able to actually read about everything and then you go investigate. When you're there, it's just a madhouse.
I started reading some of the feeds from it, and I got the same horrible feeling that I used sinking. To get walking the floor. I would just leave after a day of that angry, just at the waste. And my favorite report from CES this year was, let's get the byline right, Erin Gloria Ryan, writing for the Daily Beast, dropped acid for the first time to go to her first CES.
My God.
And it's just great. It's a great report because it's written, under the influence.
She was still tripping when she wrote it?
It kicks in about, as she's walking in, and then, the carpet freaks her out and the robots freak her out. It's really quite a story.
All the booth people dressed up in different weird costumes, inviting you over.
The booth babes. Yeah.
That's crazy. I sent
a link in.
There I wish she I'd. Is, yeah. Yeah. No, we've. I wish I'd had the guts to do this.
Yeah, I don't even know that you need to drop acid.
It's kind of like
sensory overload anyway.
This is her first time there, and she. Was she microdosing? Or was she doing the full?
It sounded hallucinations like the full thing. Yeah.
Even these straight pictures that she took of the event looked absolutely psychedelic.
Like the Polaroid cube, with this treehouse.
Yeah.
Almost like a
crazy
Michael.
Crazy.
The Halloween movie or whatever his name is.
And then the colors and.
She references Hunter Thompson, who famously
Fear and Loathing.
Took acid to report from Las Vegas.
Yeah. Wow. Not that we're advocating illegal drug use, but wow. Above my head, a monorail flew by like a dragon. Every breath felt like a laugh. In my peripheral vision, a woman very blatantly held out her cell phone to take a photo of me. She was only a few feet away. I turned to tell her to mind her own business. I'm no celebrity, just an amateur idiot drug doer getting some air. She wasn't a real woman. She was an ad for Polaroid. I laughed with relief. Ha, 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 ha. That's kind of Hunter S. Thompson-esque. All
right. Next year we should go.
Let's all take acid and go to CES, baby. Philip, you sound like
a whole section.
You sound like you
she
like
a whole section in here about the screens too and how they freaked her out. The LG, the Samsung booth, the Sony booth, like, and that was actually one of the bigger stories out of CES this year is all the screen technology,
right?
Even like haptic feedback and some of the larger, television sets and weird there. And that was really what people were sort of racing to go and actually see was some of the like the haptic feedback television sets and things. But she was on acid looking at those things. I can't imagine.
She also had the gall, nerve, guts to publish her reporter's notes.
The carpet freaks me out.
Wow. No, I wouldn't recommend that because CES is an acid trip all by itself. But actually, to me, let's talk a little bit about it because we sitting from a distance probably have a better 30,000-foot view of CES than people who are there on the floor, exhausted, sick, tired, way too much
on deadline.
Way too much giant shrimp and chocolate fountains. we avoided the side shows as well, and those always creep me out a little bit. Those are Pepcom and Showstoppers as CES unveiled that seem to be de rigueur for journalists, mostly because they get free food and booze, and
right.
And always get overcovered. All the products there get overcovered because, well, it's right there. You didn't have to go anywhere. And there's always a happy fork, you know, something like that haptic fork that.
Oh, yeah. It tells you you've eaten too much.
Yeah, that you see on every channel, everybody, because it was the first thing in the door at Showstoppers. And so everybody got a story and then they went home.
That honestly, I mean, because your producers are begging you for like, well, what are you going to be covering this week? And those early events take place early. You know, you get there on a Sunday, right. You have the press event right. On a Sunday evening. It doesn't really officially kick off till Tuesday, right? So that the stuff that's unfolding on a Monday at Showstoppers or the other one is you Pepcom or whatever, you're able to see all these in one room, in one sort of ballroom, and they're right there. And it's easy for you to walk around with your producers and get exactly. ideas and gather ideas for your shows. And those, you're right, are the things that end up getting the most coverage.
That's why those companies pay $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 to be in mm-hmm. those ballrooms, because they know if you want to get on Fox. You've done that, right? How many years have you covered CES for Fox?
I think maybe six Yikes. Or seven, Yikes. Something like that. Yeah, and I would see you. We would, yeah, you and I, you would be walking around there doing live streaming, and right.
we had a booth for several years. We had a giant booth, yeah. which was right. was crazy. And yet, I have to tell you, I do have FOMO this year, fear of missing out, because this of the last three or four CESs seemed to be the most interesting. There was some really, I think, new stuff. Yeah.
Like Amazon's.
Echo everywhere. Echo in everything.
That seemed to be the headline.
And even in the Detroit Auto Show today.
Oh, yeah?
Well, we had a live report this morning out of the Detroit Auto Show, and they obviously go back to back, and that kicks off tomorrow officially. But there's a lot of Amazon Echo built into some of the car technology, so you're now having that built into. But yeah, there was a ton. I think even Amazon was surprised at the number of Echo integrations at CES this year. They thought there might be 30 or 40. I think ended up being maybe three times that amount. Of things, and not all of them good. Not all of them have deep integration, so they don't, and they don't have internet access in certain regards. So it's not as robust an experience, I think, as people would want.
This is Fast Company, Mark Sullivan writing a list of some of the things: the Lenovo Smart Assistant speaker, LG appliances. These are all Amazon Voice Services enabled. In other words, Echo built in. Belkin's Wemo dimmer switch, Incipio command kit Wi-Fi light switch, Whirlpool appliances, Mattel's Aristotle, that's a baby monitor, Koway Air Mega smart air purifier. You tell the purifier to turn on and then ask it what the air quality is in the room. The Linksys Velop, which is a router you talk to. Nightingale, a smart sleep aid system. The Ford and Volkswagens integrating into their car services. Inrix, which is a car analytics company, says it'll have Echo in its open car platform. Huawei putting Echo in its smartphone, even though it's an Android phone. Dish, Jam Audio, Play-Fi, iHome, Monster's Soundstage Home Speaker. If it's a big monster beefy speaker with Amazon in it, that's going to sound crazy. The Ubitech Robotics Lynx, the LG Hub Robot, the Samsung PowerBot VR 7,000 and just on and on and on. Do you think Amazon charges for this? Or I would think, it seems to me, Jeff Bezos would be brilliant just to give this away.
I think it's a free API.
Yeah.
And it raises mm-hmm. the question of has Amazon got the first mover advantage? They've certainly stolen the lead over Apple, who hasn't even, marketed one of these home assistants, but they're also ahead of Google. And I thought Ben Thompson had an interesting take yes. on it. He said although the Google Home works better as far as he's concerned, and because it has direct access to all that Google knows about the internet, ultimately it should overtake Amazon. But he thinks that the advantage that Amazon has is the business model.
He says it's a platform.
Right. And if you think of it as if you think of it that way.
In the same way that Windows was, right?
Right. or Google is for the internet.
Right.
And his point about the Amazon, why he thinks Amazon will win, is because Amazon makes Google makes money by selling more ads. Apple, if they ever market one of these things, will make money by keeping people within the ecosphere. But Amazon has another business model, which is they sell stuff through this. You can order your toilet paper and you can order your orange juice. And that's where they get their juice, as it were.
So much. Yeah, I'm fascinated by this because I think there's a couple of different layers to this. One is, though, I think Amazon, to your point, Philip, I mean, that's the main place we all go to shop. So it's right there on the front page and a huge banner at the top. Everyone knows about it. I'm so surprised whenever I do a story about it on one morning on the show on Fox and Friends. I right before George Michael passed away, I was saying my favorite Christmas song is Last Christmas by Wham. I know it's cheesy, but I said I want to try something here with our audience. I want to see how many Alexas across the country I can wake up.
Please, when you do this here, don't use the A word. This is my New Year's resolution. I'm not going to use the A word, the S word, the G word, or
G-word.
The C word on the shows.
Okay.
The brand new FCC four dirty words. So please use Echo instead of the A
Echo.
Word.
Well, this is one problem. There's been a couple of reports in the past week when little girls were ordering Girl Scout cookies or whatever, showing up at their house because so many news stations didn't know that the device is actually called the Echo. And so they kept putting in the A word instead of the
– It's a huge problem.
Right. So – yeah, all these things were showing up at people's houses. But anyway, my point is that I did this test, and it was just as a fun, and our viewers sort of played along.
You warned them.
You wouldn't believe how popular this device is, and I just don't know that Google. Where do you go to buy it?
I think it's really sweet that just before George Michael passed away, you sent him a massive royalty check. Courtesy of Amazon's Echo and Fox.
I was saddened by this. I couldn't believe it.
I know.
But anyway, my point is that where do you go to really buy this?
You go to Amazon.
The Pixel.
Google's. You have to go to Google's store, right?
No, you can get it at Target as well. If you go online and ask where you can order it, there are, I think, six different places.
Okay.
I bought them for my kids. For Christmas.
You bought the Google Home, why did you buy the Home, not the Echo?
Because it felt like it had more upward movement. It could get smarter than the Echo. It's got more.
I think in the long run.
I just trust Google to be more advanced in AI, to run the network stuff better, that they have a better sense of what's in the on the internet. I have been disappointed. If you ask it like who Leo Laporte is, they'll read the first sentence out of Wikipedia, and then you want to say, okay, read the rest of the entry, and it can't do that. I don't know how to do that yet.
Both Echo and Google do that, which is weird.
Yeah.
But Google has the big knowledge graph that they've cultivated over the years. Amazon's advantage is the open API, 6,000 tasks already and more, 1,000 more 7,000. Every month, another couple of thousand. All of these installations. And the thing is, it's also got a business model in a way that Google doesn't really, right?
Right, right. That's the thing. You can sell through it and get revenue from the sales, whereas Google is continuing to do the thing, let's just make the internet bigger and we'll somehow get a piece of the advertising. It's sort of orthogonal to use.
Yeah, that's Thompson's Google's kind of way of doing it always.
What about Google advertising? I mean, we saw these weird ads for the Pixel during the holidays, which didn't make much sense, and showed a bunch of people singing, you know, with a rectangular-shaped phone image appearing over there. But nothing about Google Home. Which to me, I mean, this was like, you know, to me, the Echo is a huge gift. So many kids, my little girl's four, my son is six, all of their friends, the only thing they wanted this year was the Dot.
You're
the
kidding.
Echo Dot.
Really?
No.
Wow.
All of them. And when we would go to these like Christmas parties, they would come back and say, you know, Janice has this and Emma has that and I want the Echo
kids
Dot. That's
want
what I want.
The
I want.
Dot. Well, I gave my mom two Dots. She's 84. I gave her two Dots for Christmas and birthday. Because they're cheap now, right? This is another thing Amazon finally got, because the Echo was very expensive. But maybe they were artificially constraining it so that they could ramp up at a reasonable speed. In any event, at $50, the Echo is inexpensive enough. People might buy them. And what you really want, what Amazon wants, what you want, is an Echo in every room. Pretty soon it gets to the point where you really want to have your whole house listening to you, right?
You have to have the mothership in order for the dots to work. Is that how it goes?
No.
It just needs the internet, but it just doesn't have the speaker.
They slice the top off of an Echo.
Doesn't have the speaker. So the Google speaker, by the way, is better.
Much better. But this is the point of the dot. Everybody now, thanks to computing, has powered speakers. So you just plug them into the dot. And the dot now has as good a speaker system as you want. Or Bluetooth, right?
Right. So kids with a little Bluetooth, in this, or even one of these bad boys, what is this one called? I can't remember this one.
What is that?
I can't remember the name. That's the Amazon.
The Dash. Is that a dash?
The tap.
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 Dash, tap, dot. It's the tap.
The itch.
That's an Amazon Echo with a battery in it. It's a battery-powered speaker.
Right. You can take it out back for your barbecues, and you just tap. You have to press the button, though. And that's what a lot of
I don't like CES, that one as much. Who wants to tap anything? You just want to say
something. Well, and some of the ones at CES had to tap it twice to activate the Echo features at CES. So a lot of the Amazon integration at CES is not as seamless by a long shot as it is on the actual Echo device. So you have to double tap certain buttons that was on the floor of CES. Who wants to do that? You don't even want to hit it once. And because you have to hit this one time, I don't even want to use it.
Yeah.
That's how lazy we are.
It's really – I feel like Amazon is both – Bezos particularly is both a genius, brilliant, with long-term thinking, and the luckiest man in the world. Because I don't think Amazon Web Services, for instance, I think that was an afterthought. That was like, well, we got these servers lying around. Let's try this. And it turned out to be a massive business for Amazon. I feel like because the Fire Phone, he thought that was going to be the next big thing. You could scan anything and it'll order it. Flopola, right? But then
it was brilliant. He was able to cut bait on that so fast.
Yeah, well, that was the good news.
Yeah.
But then I feel like he stumbled on the Echo. I don't think that they understood initially the value of talking to your house, because that's really what you're doing, and having it do something for you.
Was that an in-house job, or did they buy that?
That was in-house. It was the 42, the guys who, what do they call them? Project 42, the special, actually the story of the Echo is interesting, because I think, as I remember, Bezos first saw it and didn't want it, so that's stupid. Somebody's written up the story. Let me see if I can find that, because that's actually a very interesting.
But Philip, I think you bring up a great point too about where was Apple, and I think this first mover advantage. I mean, with HomeKit, that's why before maybe I think it was right before the holiday, you saw Apple doing some press events quietly in different cities, or maybe just in one or two cities about HomeKit. And wanting to sort of remind everyone, I think it was maybe right before the holidays, about HomeKit integration and all of the bells and whistles that HomeKit could provide. But boy, I have to say, with this explosion of Echo-powered items at CES, I think you're right. I think this – I don't know if it's first mover advantage. I don't know exactly what it is right now, but I think Apple is behind the eight ball on this.
Not just Apple. I mean, Microsoft, Cortana, they're working as hard as they can, but Siri is a sad story.
Because Siri was there first.
Yeah.
It was there first. And it, in theory, it should be as good as anything Google can do. It should be better than Amazon. I mean, Amazon, to its credit, discovered that what really mattered was that the machine understood what you said, heard what you said, and could parse it. And because it's plugged into the wall and it's got seven microphones or whatever it is, it's very good at that. For Apple to get over the problem with Siri now, which is it usually doesn't understand you and you usually want to throw it out the window, they're going to have to make a standalone thing that plugs into the wall that has that kind of microphone capability. And, Apple typically, they should have the advantage. They have all they build the whole stack. They've got designers. They should know how to do this. But because they move so slowly, they get overtaken. I don't think we can write them off yet. I think that the investment in Siri will eventually pay off, but it could be so late that It's hard to say.
Do you guys think that it's still so nascent? I mean, the idea that, as you're to your point, I mean, Apple usually likes to sit back on these things, except for the Apple Watch, right? They were sort of first to the game in this. But they're sort of like to sit back and watch how this unfolds. And I think this, to my mind, it's still a pretty nascent. I have friends who come over. They say, oh, how do you like that thing? I've been seeing that. But they still don't own it. They still haven't made the plunge to go out and buy this device. And Apple has that power. They have the stores. They have all of that infrastructure. And plus, Amazon, the Echo really only works really well in the United States. I mean, you don't have
a very good
global
reach. It is not a global
reach. They don't have
this
global reach.
Yeah.
So Apple can come out of the gate with something powerful.
So there is an opportunity for Apple. You're absolutely right. Amazon doesn't say how many Echoes they've sold, but even if it's millions, it's not Apple scale numbers. So there is an opportunity. Here's the, by the way, the article I was referring to, and I just want to side note, and then we'll go back. But this is Joshua Brustein from April of 2016. It was on Bloomberg. The real story of how Amazon built the Echo is Lab 126, which was created to make the Kindle, made the Fire Phone. When he killed the Fire Phone, Bezos saved the Echo as a side project. I was mistaken. I don't think Bezos didn't like the Echo. I think he did like it. But what he also liked was a different name. He wanted to call it the Amazon Flash. And it was going to be called the Flash up to a few weeks before it shipped. And employees convinced him to change the name to Echo. The original boxes, which had already been printed, had to be destroyed. So that's a little...
Look at these graphics. Look at these graphics.
A little bit of dancing Echo.
It's Bloomberg.
Bloomberg, I know. I know. This is kind of a wild... I think Bloomberg was... This is in April. It was a different Bloomberg then.
that's not distracting. They were
trying something else. This looks like actually...
Is that?
Yeah.
He's wearing diapers.
He's tripping.
Diapers.
Yeah, and it looks like he's smoking, which I don't... He's a smoking baby. It's a very strange... But it's a great story. I mean, it's one of those stories where really good reporting, because they don't talk about this stuff. They try not to talk about this stuff. Yeah. In fact, he points out many of the people who created the Echo aren't at Amazon anymore.
That's how he was able to report it, probably.
Probably that's who he got for a source, right? And when he wrote this, by the way, Echo had 600 or 500 skills. And he says, you know, he's wow, it has more than 500 skills. So that was April.
Well, have you explored these 7,000 skills?
No, that's part of the problem.
No, but the key ones need to work really well.
And
right?
They do, yeah. Yeah.
Play music, right? And around the holidays, we used it ad nauseum, right? We just come home making food, cookies, whatever, and just say, Echo, play Christmas music, play holiday music. And my wife using it constantly for countdown timers in the kitchen, you know, set timer for 10 minutes. Like those, what's the forecast for tomorrow? Can we go skiing? Like those, like three key areas, it was crushing. And then I would do Google Home. And I found that every time I would start playing a playlist or music, it would play one song and stop. And that for me was like a deal breaker. It was crazy. Over and over again. But those 7,000, no, I haven't explored.
I loaded up a bunch of joke skills, they call
terrible.
Them. So the Umama jokes and guy walks into a bar. They're all pretty bad.
Yeah.
I solved the Google plays one song problem. You have to step up and get a full paid version of Spotify. And then if you say, you know, play all of Amy Winehouse, it's got it. And
that was the other thing Amazon did that was brilliant is Amazon Unlimited Music. In fact, really smart, and I wonder how this is going. It's only $4 a month if you only use it with one Echo. And I realize that the market for that is students, young people, people living in studio apartments, Karsten Bondi, my producer, people who, if you only want music in one area, you hook up your dot to a good set of speakers. That's your stereo. And for $4 a month, you get Spotify size playlist. That's a killer app itself. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, who would have guessed that the killer app was really the kitchen timer? That's what we use it for more than anything else.
I think that was the camel's nose under the tent. Because they got to give you one thing you'll use all the time regularly. But that was, now the Echo is not just in the kitchen anymore, is it? It's in the bedroom now and it's everywhere in my house.
How does that work? I only have one in the kitchen. Do you find that, because I find it so responsive, that let's say you've got one near where the kids are sleeping and you want to know what the forecast is. Does it trip and work in the other room and wake up other people?
It used to. So we had an echo in the gym, which was right off the kitchen, and I hear them both respond and both set timers and both go off. But about a month ago, Amazon did the obvious. It knows which one's closer because of the Array mic, and it now seamlessly picks the right one. This is what that tells you is that Amazon didn't have the problem because everybody had one. And as soon as it became a widespread problem, as people bought second Echoes, they had to solve it, and they did. So I think Jeff is quite brilliant in this, and I would not count him out either. Of course, you can't count Apple or Microsoft or Google out, but this is a great battlefield, and I think CES showed it. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about CES and some of the things people saw. Well, we didn't see, but we have eyes and ears there. Actually, our own father, I said a priest down, Father Robert Ballasaire down there. He did some exorcisms and had a lot of fun. We'll talk about that in a second. Our show today brought to you by those great people at Squarespace. They host my website, leolaporte.com. They should host your next website. With New Year come new resolutions, new ideas, new goals. Whether you're starting a business, you're changing careers, you're launching a creative project, Squarespace provides the platform to make your next move known to the world. And man, what a beautiful, beautiful site you'll have with Squarespace. They do the hosting and the content management system designed to give you not only a beautiful site, but a site that works great, never goes down because they have the best hosting in the business, has e-commerce built in. In fact, it's the only web hosting company that gives you e-commerce that matches the aesthetic of your site. And the site matches your personal aesthetic. Every Squarespace site looks different. You start with one of their great templates. Their templates have great design because they use really good designers, but also in the engineering behind the template, state-of-the-art, mobile responsive. That means you don't have to have a separate mobile site. It looks great on any size screen today. That's very important. Every template has commerce built into it. Lots of features, too, for your growing business. The commerce there will get you started right away. You'll be able to accept payments right away, even if you don't have a merchant account yet. They have all sorts of integrations into all of the things you need, including things like inventory control and shipping. You can get a free custom domain name when you purchase an annual plan at Squarespace. 24/7 support, of course. In fact, even if you aren't ready to make your next website, they have Squarespace domains where you can buy a domain name and get a landing page that looks great. It's not filled with spam or junk. It just looks great until you're ready to get going. And I really like that. Squarespace.com. Try it right now. It's free. Just click that start your free trial button at Squarespace.com. But if you do me a favor, if you decide, hey, you know, I love this, I want to buy it, and it's very affordable, use the offer code TWIT. You'll get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace.com. It's the place to make your next website. I put in my ears so I'd match you guys. Clayton Morris is here from Fox and Friends. God, we look like some strange cult. And also there's another problem. I can't hear you. So let me put my headphones in. we're in the cult.
I couldn't hear Clayton either.
Oh.
Did he turn his mic off?
Oh, I thought it was a failure of the Bluetooth.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we turned you down because of the ad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Also here, Philip Elmer DeWitt. By the way, I neglected to plug PED 30, or PED 3.0, as you prefer it. His fabulous blog and news site. How's it going? Is it going well?
It's going well. And this week I put up my first podcast.
Oh, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
You've joined the club. Everybody here has their own show now.
mine was sort of newsy, you know, Gene Munster, the everybody's favorite sell-side Apple analyst. Joined the other side. He started a venture capital fund.
What? Really? And, wow. He's the guy who said Apple's going to do a TV for like five years.
A TV show. Yeah. So I got the first broadcast interview with Gene Munster in his new gig and got him to tell me the story about how he got set off on that Apple television rumor. It turned out he was told by a TV manufacturer who had been working with Apple, probably LG, because Apple had just cut a big deal with LG. And they told him that Apple was building this television set. And he just ran with it for, he started writing about it in 2009. Predicting every time he wrote about it, he said it's coming in 2 years, and he got all the way up to 2016. And then who was it? It was Carl Icahn wrote a memo to Tim Cook saying how great it would be when Apple television came out this year with two models that sell 10 million in the first year. And Apple felt obliged to tell the Wall Street Journal that they'd killed the project a year earlier.
So there was a project at some point.
Well, he says, to his credit, there was something going on, but he says he just got it wrong, and he kept pressing it. He was one of those guys who'd be on the Apple earnings call, and every time he would ask about the television, and it became an industry joke, and it didn't help his reputation, and I don't think it helped him within Piper Jaffray. So he's off on his own with a couple of his old buds from Piper Jaffray, and they're going to be investing in AR, VR, AI, and robotics. That's their gig.
Well, I'm glad you're doing a podcast. Clayton, let's plug yours while we're plugging away here.
Sure. Well, thank you. You know, actually, I launched the podcast, I think, back in May, the last time I was on. I launched it on Twit. It's called the Investing in Real Estate Podcast, and it exploded. We think we just passed 2.5 million downloads.
Nice. Wow. Good for you.
Wow.
And awesome. You wouldn't believe how many Twit listeners listen to our show and then have worked with our team and or have become real estate investors or who got off the couch and finally took action. It's been amazing. I would ask them, where'd you hear about us? Twit. Heard you
good.
On Twit.
Good.
So how thanks
often,
so much.
How often do you post a podcast, Kate Clayton?
We publish it three times a week. So on a Monday, I do sort of a 10-minute sort of monologue episode about strategies and tactics for real estate investing. On Wednesday, my wife, Natalie, and I host a show together where we talk about how to set up your on your taxes, how to structure your investing for your family, because that's where she and I work very closely on with the spreadsheets and making sure that we're saving, a boatload on taxes and how to set up your LLCs properly. So that's the show on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, I have an expert, somebody who owns 500 properties, 600 properties, who's we can talk about multifamily investing. The whole show is dedicated to just buy and hold real estate. So that's what the whole show is about. So it's been
how did you get in? How did you get into real estate? Why'd you choose that?
Years ago, I started rehabbing houses when I lived in Florida and went through the crash.
You've done this for ages. Foreclosure.
Yeah, I went through a long time. And, you realize, man, you look at the rockiness of the stock market, the ups and downs and the craziness of what's happening in the bond market and China and everything else. The one consistent thing is always buying real estate, buying it right and holding it for the purposes of high return cash flow. Like that's, to me, there's no greater investment. More millionaires have been made in this country from real estate investing. All of the tax laws are written to benefit real estate investors in this country. Almost every member of Congress is a real estate investor. So when you look at it that way, and if you own a business, a lot of your listeners are small business owners, what a way to offset your personal income by owning real estate. I mean, the depreciation you can claim, it's amazing. When you start to dive into it, you will never go back. I'm telling you.
Wow. Now you sold me. Where do I sign up?
Were you riding it when the bubble burst in real estate? Were you?
Yeah, I had. Well, I mean, it's funny. It's like if you talk to any like high level real estate investor during that time who own hundreds of properties, for cash flow, they didn't see one dip in their rental income. Yeah, what they did see was a drop in value, which is fine, but they're going to hold it for the rest of their life. So if they lost $15,000, $20,000 in value, it didn't matter because they weren't selling it. The people who got really hurt, of course, during the bubble were the people with those 5-year mortgages, the movie The Big Short, of course, focused on the people who were buying it for appreciation. They buy a house and then 3 months later try to flip it, like in California and Stockton, California or Florida. Those are the people that got burnt, the people that overleveraged. But the people who are holding real estate for the purposes of cash flow with a tenant, those people did fine. So that's what I focus on. I've certainly been through the foreclosure stuff in 2008, and I'll never go back to that again. Now I know better.
If interest rates are starting to trend up, if they go up, does that affect it? Or do you like my new hat? You like that?
I love it.
Yeah.
The Elmer Fudd. Yeah. You know, interest rates, it's interesting. I mean, you look at what's going on. I mean, it goes up a little bit, but really that affects the broader home buying market if you're going to go out and for your own personal residence.
Right.
And yes, if you're going to buy houses with a bank for the purposes of rental real estate, yes, it's going to affect it a little bit. But for the most part, we're still at historic lows for interest rates. So I don't see a big shift. I think mostly in the primary personal home buying market, you will. But even though these interest rates went up a little bit, they're still at historic lows. Think about the early 80s. They were like 18, 19, 20% interest rates. You know, the real story is that millennials aren't buying any real estate. They're waiting until they have children and they buy that 4- and 5-bedroom house. They're not buying those starter homes, 3-bedroom, 1-bath, 2-bedroom, 1-bath. But you know what? People need to rent those. So those are the ones that I buy. And builders aren't building them. So it's like one of the greatest times in our history right now for rental real estate.
You know what I can tell you? It's a bad time to buy consumer – invest in consumer electronics. Very bad. What do you – very bad time to do that. I do this
to you.
How
many have you got of those things?
You do this to me every time. What is that?
I know. You're always on that show. I don't know what this is. Am I wearing it wrong? I don't even know if I'm wearing it wrong. I think this is my football helmet from when I was – they called me the rambling – the rambling twit from just down the road a bit. And yeah. So CES. If this were flesh colored, I would look bald. I don't know why.
Speaking of wearables, you got a wearable on. And I thought that was one of the other big stories at CES was, you know, the few smartwatches. And I think
Is
Google
that a story? Isn't this a flop? Isn't this a dead category?
But I think that's interesting. To me, that's it. Like where Google is sort of dropping the ball in Android Wear. And you saw like Garmin coming out with some interesting stuff this year at CES and some other companies where they're seeing some opportunities in the wearables market and Google dropping the ball with Android Wear. I don't know. I don't know what Google was doing. Maybe
they have announced Android Wear too, right? They announced – in fact, I think Casio announced the first Android Wear 2 watch. But I don't know what's different. And Motorola said we're not going to make a new 360. Fitbit, right. Even though Fitbit now has bought Pebble and is like the number one – wearable, its profit margin is pathetic. I don't think it's a very good market. This is the kind of thing that, you know, people say, but Apple's selling millions of these. It's, you know, in fact, everybody seems to be thinking this is, you know, this is a huge product. But that's Apple can brute force anything at this point. Whether it has lasting power is another question entirely. Don't you think, Philip, they've brute forced this a little bit? They've kind of shoved it down the market?
I'm not sure I'd use that verb. It's true that people who have bought into the Apple ecosystem are much more likely to buy one of these than the ordinary citizens. I think they're going to do fine. They're making good money on it. They've continued to put resources in it. I don't know that they. I'm still on my first one. I didn't upgrade to the second, and I probably won't upgrade to the third. Until they put a communications chip in it, it's just fine the way it is. I think these earbuds
that's the wearable of the future. I agree with you.
Those are the wearables that are going to take off. I tapped it twice, and now
Siri's gotten excited.
Shut up!
Alex. That
or
is, by the way,
not
a felicitous use of.
I lost my volume. Hold on.
All right. I'll make the point while Philip is fixing this. I'll make the point that Apple has an opportunity, but Apple's history of late has been to fumble these opportunities one right after the other. This could be huge. In fact, I was very excited when I saw the AirPods. This would make a great hearing aid. It's got microphones on it. There's so many things you could do with this. It's so close to the ear, it can measure blood oxygen. Because as far as it is in the ear, it's close enough to the, I guess it's the tympanic membrane, that it could actually monitor that kind of thing. It certainly could see heart rate. So there's a lot of things this could do that a watch can't do. But they've got to get that dopey double tap. They've got to get the voice interface right.
And they'll get there, I think, with firmware.
Yeah, they've only put my suspicion is that they made it as simple as possible the first go around, and they've limited the functionality. I hate that word. To, you know, you turn headphones. It on, and then there's the two taps. What it's the thing it's most obviously missing is a volume button. We've lost. It's actually worse than the wired earphones in terms of the volume and the skip forward and all those great things. And you now you have to use your watch or your phone to do that. But that's I think it's just a software change. They can add those features once. I think I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure they. I'm sure they probably could, and I'm sure they probably also learned a lot from that iPod Shuffle, the one that had no buttons.
Right.
And I bet, you know, I bet they probably took a lot of data away from what exactly were people using it, because when you're trying to remember these gestures, you know, when you're out jogging, you're out doing these different things, and if you don't use them often, to me, it's like keyboard shortcuts. Unless you have like a little cheat sheet written down that you can remember, is it up, down, I swipe left, no wait, double tap left, swipe up, tickle my earbud, you know, touch my nose, that's how I can skip a song. What if I want to go ahead 30 seconds? For instance, Marco Arman, who built Overcast, there's a bunch of features in his integration with the ear, the stringed earbuds, where you can do certain taps that'll take you forward a bit or back, and I can never remember which way is which. So they might have some good data from the iPod Shuffle experience that shows, you know what, people simply weren't using all these little bells and whistles. Let's give them the basics, and we'll refine it over time to see if people really want that volume up or down. But I could certainly see that being the case. There was a Parrot headset a few years ago, the larger sort of canned headset from Parrot, where you would swipe your finger up. And I love that you could just with a swipe of your finger up, turn the volume up. But I could never really remember where to hit it properly. And so you would really blast your ears out or you accidentally turned off Bluetooth. You know, so you, it needs to be done right. Otherwise, you'll never use it again if you try it once and it doesn't work for you.
Well, talking about the bell, you you quoted Chuck von Rosbach in your blog, Philip, in PD3.0. He says Apple, you know, by the way, Chuck, 17 years at Apple, among other companies. He and I got into a regular back and forth over Apple when I was extremely critical of Apple during the Gil Emilio era on the radio here in the Bay Area, and he was an Apple employee listening. I think I was proven right, but now Chuck's kind of changed his tune as well. And he says Apple's problem right now is they're chopping the edge off the bell curve. He said Apple is focusing on the fat belly, the fat middle of its product line, but as a result, it's hurting the smaller but highly influential groups, people who buy Mac Pros, for instance. Apple's relying on data too much. They're making business decisions that don't cater to a large enough group of people. Do you agree with him, Philip?
Well, no, it's the opposite. They're so focused on the middle of the bell curve,
right,
and chopping off the smallest people on the edges, and this last with the Mac, you know, without updating the Mac Pro and with the latest MacBook Pro, they've angered an important tiny part of the bell curve, and they've they've sort of paid for it with a lot of angry pro users. I thought the telling quote from it was, you know, if you just look at the bottom line, if you just look at the numbers, it looks like everything's fine. And I think it's sort of what everybody feared about Tim Cook is that he's a guy who knows spreadsheets, he knows how to build a supply chain, but he's not a product guy, so he's likely to make that kind of mistake. Not deliver, let the pro users go because there's not that many of them and they don't make that much money from them. But Chuck's point is that this is an incredibly influential group.
Right.
You don't want them angry. It's worth spending a little money to keep them happy and to keep them in the fold. Like I say, it's what we really worry about Tim Cook, and that maybe they do need I'm not one of the ones who say they need to replace Tim Cook, but it seems like they need a product guy with enough influence within the organization that they get this stuff right on the edges.
Well, Apple, according to Recode, Apple was absent from CES. This is Ina Fried writing, in a worse way than usual, because Apple, although they haven't had a booth there in years, almost always dominated the conversation. They had new iPhones come out in that same time frame. In fact, they often competed and won the news cycle during CES.
I remember Alex Lindsay and I standing outside the hall at CES one year talking about the impending iPad or whatever it was to be called.
Yes.
That was all anyone was talking about.
Right.
Was the iPad or potential iPad at CES. No one really cared what was happening. We saw some crappy tablets show up, remember?
They were horrible. Yeah.
Yeah, Steve Ballmer got up on stage and showed that HP thing that never saw the light of day, right? It just is an attempt to kind of come out first with a, we've got a tablet. But you're right. I mean, I think, and especially in the HomeKit area, because that's what I'm always really interested in is how people are using technology in the home. And I thought that it just was crickets.
Yeah. Well, they're crickets in general. I mean, Amazon aside, this has been a struggling section, this whole home automation section.
But you're right. I think you're right, Philip, though, about the voices, though, the people, the echo chamber, the people that are talking about Apple the most, the press, the tech reporters who host podcasts and so forth, where that's happening. I don't know how influential it is. Those are the people that buy Mac Pros. Those are the developers that have podcasts that talk about not a lack of a Mac Pro update. And therefore, I think it drives that conversation. To the average person, though, if I were to ask again, my mom, she wouldn't even know what a Mac Pro is. Does she care? Yet she has an iPhone, she has an iPad, and every night she sits down and plays Words with Friends on her iPad. Ask her about a Mac Pro, and she wouldn't care less.
Yeah, interesting. Certainly, that's what Apple's betting. But for the diehard Apple fans, and I include myself in that group, it's a little depressing to see them become an iPhone company.
And looking down the road, I mean, everybody's assuming that the self-driving car is going to be the next thing that might be as big as the smartphone. And Apple already found itself behind the curve enough that they had to lay off all the people that were actually building a car and then refocus the car effort on, you know, what they thought they could, where they thought they could really add value and distinguish themselves.
To be fair, Google has done the same thing, and they've been in, you know, working on autonomous vehicles longer than anybody. And even they this year decided to change the name to Waymo and to focus on selling the technology to actual car manufacturers. I think that's probably wise. That's a tough, Tesla aside, that's a very tough business to just get into.
And then you have Nissan announcing, you know, at the Detroit Auto Show, overnight, and we've got to show it off on the show this morning, Nissan with their teleoperating car, the autonomous, being able to drive that car remotely, and some really neat innovations in the autopilot area.
That's really
right. So Nissan, so I don't know, maybe it's being better left to the car manufacturers who know what they're doing. I don't know. Or it's, if they know something you don't,
it's a high risk high reward business.
But my sense is that it is a platform game eventually, and that the it's going to matter less who builds the physical car than what platform it runs.
This is really interesting. So Nissan wants to have professional drivers in call centers driving you.
Right.
That's
seems like that, like an interim solution, doesn't it?
Why not? We've got our entire military sitting in Nebraska or in Oklahoma flying drones over Afghanistan.
True.
Yeah, that doesn't scale up real well, though. I mean, there are millions and millions of cars. There are probably hundreds of drones.
The idea is that this technology in these Nissans, though, would talk to other Nissans. And so this is the first rollout of these cars that would be talking to each other as they're driving. So,
That's interesting. So it really,
it's a new standard also. Yeah. The idea is that this standard would be built into all cars. So we wouldn't have 30 different styles of speaking to each other. We would have one universal standard to avoid accidents and to be able to have a remote fleet, I guess, that wouldn't be, you know, take human error completely out of the equation.
Interesting.
Right. Well, everybody wants to be that standard. And that's, I think that is the battle going forward, because you can't have multiple standards on the highway, or it makes it much more complicated. I would be very surprised if the standard that's adopted in the U.S. is Nissan's.
Right. Right. You see that with Tesla, though, right, Leo? I mean, you know, like you got the Tesla plug, right, which so you know where you can park in your own garage or I can park, you know, I go to the mall. There's certain Tesla spots you can plug into. Or there's the other one, the smaller, right. You know, the smaller plug. Right. So you've got these weird, and you're like, is that a Tesla? Oh, it's hard to see. And then only Tesla's putting in those things and they have to get approval. And it's kind of a mess.
I would be willing to bet. Go ahead.
I was going to ask, you're driving a Tesla, right?
Yeah. I got the impression Clayton is too. Are you driving a Tesla?
Yes.
Okay. Wasn't sure if he should tell the world. It's a secret.
Yes. I call it the Batmobile.
The Batmobile. So I love my Tesla. And I haven't found any, but I don't drive it long distances. I haven't had any charging issues because I fill it up every night. I start the day with a full
standard.
The standard, but your Tesla has an adapter, doesn't it? Mine does. I have the adapters to charge from anything. The real problem isn't that; it's just slow. You want to go to a supercharger because it's fast.
Exactly. And so I drove a Nissan Leaf before. So,
right.
When you flipped open the lid, you saw like multiple, you know, there was like multiple charging options.
Wow.
Different holes. You would open it up and there was the one,
that's one way
you would normally charge
that.
And there was like a bigger one. Yeah. And, you know, it was weird. And then of course you pull up to the different stations and you've got the charge point stations, you've got the Tesla station, you've got those different infrastructure. And now Tesla is even rolling back by December 31st of 2016. So just a week ago. They are no longer. If you're grandfathered into purchasing the Tesla, you can access and plug into those supercharged stations. But Elon was fielding these complaints from all these people who would just park and plug in and top off, even if they didn't need to, just because they were there. They'd pull up and they get that 10 miles or so of charging to top off when someone could pull up and actually really needed to plug in. So now they're going to charge you for that instead of giving it away for free, which was an incentive with Tesla before.
I think it was Calacanis who stimulated that. Jason was pissed off because there were people sitting at superchargers all day. And he tweeted Elon, said, you got to solve this. Elon said, I'm getting on it. And like 3 days later announced that they were going to solve this by charging you for every minute that you sat at a supercharger not charging. So that shows you how a well-run company does listen to customers, even on Twitter, and can respond very quickly.
Right. He could look at the data and say, you're right.
He did. I think, actually, self-driving cars may be a MacGuffin. I think we're way off with those. There's so many other issues, regulatory issues, acceptance issues from drivers. Admittedly, there's a lot of pressure going the other way from insurance companies and the fact that traffic fatalities are going up for the first time in years because people are playing words with friends while they're driving down the road.
Pokemon Go.
Actually, Pokemon Go is probably the worst. But I think augmented reality might actually be what Apple's really working on. We certainly have heard a couple of hints from Tim Cook about that.
Yeah, I mean, he's been pretty open about it.
Yeah. And that would be, to me, another kind of technology that could change everything.
Where do you see it on glasses or on the windshields of cars?
I would see it on glasses. Okay. I would see it because you want it everywhere. And I think that the idea of I think that the value of this is, first of all, and this is what Microsoft's investigating, a different UI. Microsoft's doing Windows holographic, and they're very close to shipping that in just a few months. And of course, they already have a product, the HoloLens, which is in its infancy, but actually exists and is being sold. I think Apple would be looking at that, but I think more importantly, it seems to me Apple's decided the computer is not where it wants to be. It wants to be in consumer electronics. I think Apple sees it as a product as important to you in 5 years as an iPhone. That you wouldn't go out of the house without wearing your augmented specs because it would tell you all sorts of stuff about the world around you, the people you're meeting, and that would become a huge flow of information that's unique to you. And I think that's going to be huge. So my bet, if I were going to bet, is that that's what Apple is thinking. That's what Apple's working on. It's the next closest thing to creating a category like the iPhone.
I think in healthcare too. I had lunch with a buddy of mine the other day who is intimately involved in some big different healthcare initiatives and companies. And one of the things, he's right there in the operating room on a regular basis, running all these tests, and they're working on, you know, operations and surgeries. And I think augmented reality, I think that's where Google Glass really could have shined, is having a surgeon working in a particular capacity and having somebody else guiding them in a way, but having that overlay over optically,
right,
to be able to do things three-dimensionally even in ways that a microscope can't, getting that three-dimensional view of a spinal column, for instance, or those sorts of things. So there's all sorts of applications, I think, in enterprise and in healthcare, and that's where everyone wants to be because there's so much money in healthcare. Also, we saw that at CES too, didn't we? I mean, we saw these VR add-ons to baseball bats and things at CES this year, where from, I could imagine, like the Philadelphia Phillies, who need all the hitting help they could get, overlaying in batting practice VR applications with the baseball bat and actually getting and being able to swing at different pitches without even having to have a pitcher there throwing the ball at them, but they're able to work on their speed and they're able to time it with the VR headset. The latency, that was one of the big things that we saw at CES as well, getting rid of the latency with VR so that you're not throwing up, which, you know, who wants to put on VR headsets and throw up because of latency? So having that latency removed from that experience, whether it's VR, whether it's augmented reality, but I think you're seeing maybe more of practical applications in the enterprise space than you are even in the consumer space right now beyond gaming. I don't know.
To me, Apple's looking for a vertical niche. They're looking for something they can sell 100 million, 200 million, 500 million, a billion units of. And,
right.
And that is going to be something very general. I don't think you have to worry so much about latency with AR because you're looking at the real world and you're superimposing, you know, thought bubbles or whatever on it. So you don't have that nausea effect. You're seeing what you would see otherwise. One thing I see is a lot of people wouldn't want to wear glasses, and yet everybody wears sunglasses, right? I mean, that's hip, that's with it, that's cool. I don't know. What do you think, Philip? You've been watching Apple longer than anybody.
Yeah, I would take a slightly different tack. I think one of the problems with the watch is that it came out when people were when the market was moving the other way. People were wearing less watches and depending on their phones. So you're sort of asking the ship that was already headed in one direction to turn and fall back in love with the thing on the wrist. One reason I'm so bullish on the earbuds, is we're actually becoming more dependent on things in our ears. We listen to books, we listen to podcasts, we spend more time with things in our ears, and there it feels like they're riding a curve that's going in the right direction, if you pardon the mixed metaphor. So and considering all the things you can maybe eventually do with this thing, it's an important piece of real estate, and there they seem to have the first mover advantage. There've been certainly been a lot of other wireless things that you put in your ear, but you know, the big step forward that they made was they're the first that you don't have a wire connecting the two ears.
No, there are others. There are others.
I think Samsung may have one. But
it's very typical of Apple, where there was a scattered market of very similar devices, and Apple just went and coalesced it into something much better.
The Braggy headset.
Braggy was a big Kickstarter. I know a lot of people hate those.
Do you know what they're priced at?
They're
expensive.
Yeah, I think they're more.
The Braggies are like $299 or $399.
Yeah. Right. This was unusual. Apple actually came on under the market, and $159 actually looks relatively cheap compared to the competition, which is, for me, another sign that Apple is going to be aggressive here. Anyway, I forgot what I was going to say.
Samsung,
Take it away.
Somebody makes something very similar with a charging case. You put the two pieces in there. I don't think that's so unusual. I don't. For some reason, I feel like Apple's going to struggle with these. I don't feel like these are going to be a big market for Apple. I might be wrong. I like mine a lot, by the way. Obviously, you guys do too.
Yeah. Although the reason I wear this hat is I think I'm the only person in Franklin County, Massachusetts, that has these things. I'm not sure they're socially acceptable yet.
One's going to say, what's that in your ear? It looks like a Bluetooth. You know, they'll figure out he's got a new Bluetooth headset.
I never could wear a Bluetooth headset. It felt obnoxious.
It is obnoxious.
It's like,
so yeah, my wife thinks I look ridiculous.
I think we will get, and next year we'll be talking about this and we'll go, oh yeah, everybody's used to that now. No big deal.
All right, well, we'll
how
see.
Many of us will have lost five pairs by then?
That's the other problem, isn't it?
These are going to
be the
most
expensive toy just because you keep losing them.
How many people will be washing them?
Yeah.
What happens if you drop one in the snow? And I said, oh, that's no problem. I'll just call myself and it'll ring. Well, it turns out that doesn't work. You can't call yourself.
No, but Rene Ritchie, as you know, did do that. He was demonstrating. He found that he turned them up really loud and listened. He could hear his earbuds.
Really?
It stops playing. He figured out a way to get it to play. I don't remember what it was.
All right. Well, I had also to go out with it.
Go ahead.
In the App Store, will let you find them.
Oh, there you go.
Good.
You know, it's like Find My AirPods is an app in the App Store. I don't know. Did Apple take it down yet? I don't know. They use like, there's Apple.
Apple took it down.
It's already been taken down. Oh, good.
So I have a very, very expensive pair of real hearing aids. And I mean, much more expensive than this. And maybe because they're so expensive, I haven't lost them. But they're the same size, same problem, same box. But I haven't lost them. So I think, you know, these are precious enough. You make sure you don't lose them. They don't fall out.
Well, when you wear your aviator hat in the cold, they do fall out. Yeah. I've dropped them twice now in the snow.
Oh dear!
And I had to go out with a sifter and a shovel.
What?
And like a metal detector?
Through the snow until I found my missing AirPods.
Oh,
so
you do love
it is actually a real problem.
They should make them in other colors. So what you're doing is you got to get the flap nice and tight on the ear. Yeah. Then they won't fall out. Oops, I double tapped and Siri came up.
There you go. Well,
it says,
I don't know. I'm not sure they're socially acceptable yet. That's my point.
It says, I found something on the web about call fallout, Pip-Boy, Siri fell out. So
I am surprised how many people know about these as I've walked around with them, whether at the gym or other places.
Really, they recognize them.
Are those the new Apple Air? And so there's like no advertising for them.
No, they're marketing geniuses, though. That's kind of what I meant when I said they can brute force a product.
Well, they really blew this Christmas. And I think it should be said that they promised them for the end of October. They didn't deliver them in October. They didn't deliver them in December. They delivered them in small enough quantities just before Christmas that you had to order them that day.
Yes.
The first day to maybe get them by Christmas.
Yep.
It was – the timing was so weird that part of me thought, well, wait a minute. Did they – do this on purpose because they knew they'd made their December numbers with iPhone sales and they didn't need the revenue from the AirPod and they were going to push it into the second quarter where they really needed the sales. But I'm told by someone who's talked to people at Apple that no, they really did screw up and they couldn't get them. There was some problem with the sync. And this was a real, failure to deliver on time.
Look what happened. Tim Cook lost a considerable amount of his bonus this year for 2016 because of Apple missing its sales targets. This is the first time since 2009 Apple's missed its sales and profit goals.
I made a graph to see how big a haircut they got and showed what their compensation was would have been and what it actually ended up being.
By the way, nice choice of graphic on that blog.
Thank you.
Barbara.
I couldn't find a picture of Tim Cook getting a haircut. But if you go down to the bottom there, now click on 215 and 216 to see how big a difference it made.
Okay.
Can you click on 216 on the top right there?
Yeah, I could do it. Why don't I do it because I have the giant Surface Pro, and I can go. So not that much. It's 15%. 15%, though. Hey, it's millions of dollars. Why is Tim so underpaid compared to these other people?
Because he got a huge bonus that spread out over 10 years.
By the way, this is fun. How did you set this up? I like it. Push the buttons.
It's a little app called
Interactive.
I forget what the app is.
Look at that. Yeah. Back and forth. Cool. Back and forth. Love this, by the way, and it's not news anymore. But this is the Surface Studio, and I just love it. Except,
what kind of stand do you have it on?
No, this is it. This is the computer has its own
It's a, and that one, huh? The one you got there, that's
the Shepard Smith one.
That one's that's the $14,000 one, right?
Yeah. No, it's it felt like it. I got to admit, it was, I think, $2,100, something like that.
And that's the screen inside the Tesla, too, which is cool. You can take it out,
Same size, you just pop it in. It's amazing. Right. It's amazing. No, I love this in the pen. And look, see, I can do stuff like this. Watch. Double-click the pen, and now I can draw circles. I can point up. I can point down. I can point around. Take that,
how
John
Madden.
How
soon do we see these? How soon until we see these on NFL broadcasts?
Well, you know, we put a lot of work into getting a Telestrator working on TV. It's non-trivial. And so this is kind of like, wow, that was easy. That's the best way to do it. Hey, let's take a break. I want to ask you about your friend Campbell Brown and if Facebook approached you before they approached her, but that's coming up. Oh, Clayton's looking down. I think I got it.
I just got a cuticle that needs trimming.
Okay. Wow. Our show today. I love it. Clayton Morris, ladies and gentlemen, Fox and Friends. All right. And from PED 3.0, Philip Elmer DeWitt. So you get, when you wear a hat like this, do you drop the Philip?
We'll do a separate story there.
Hello, Elma, welcome. Our show today brought to you. I should take this off. The sponsors will just hate it. I should take this off. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Now, I'm serious now. I'm wearing my business suit here because ZipRecruiter, this is for all you people in business, whether you're a sole proprietor or you're an HR where they have to do the hiring. You have the most important job in any business because a company, Steve Jobs said this. He said the company is one of the greatest inventions of the last several centuries. The idea that you can get a bunch of people together, align them on a goal, and create something that no individual could do by himself. It's amazing. And so your company, it's made of people. It's made of people. And a good employee, the right hire, boom, can send your company through the roof. The wrong hire, as you probably already know, because who hasn't made a wrong hire in their time, can bring it down. And that's why it's important that when the time comes, and it's hard because I know when you're short-staffed, that's the time, you know, you don't want to spend a lot of time looking for the replacement. But ZipRecruiter makes it so easy. ZipRecruiter.com is what we use at Twit. I love this. Now, you're on the part of ZipRecruiter where you search for a job, Karsten, but you can also click that button that says post a job. This is awesome. You post once to ZipRecruiter. It now goes to more than 200 job boards. They've expanded it, and Twitter and Facebook. So the idea is you want to get that job listing in front of the most number of people possible because the right person's there, but you don't know where or which board are they on, where they, you know, you don't know. So you get it as broadcast as widely as possible. You can post jobs for any industry anywhere in the country. But here's the beauty of it. You're going to say, well, I don't want to post it that all those job boards. I'm going to get millions of emails. No. You don't get any emails. You don't get any phone calls. It all goes into ZipRecruiter's interface, which makes it very easy to screen them. You can even create questionnaires, multiple choice, essay questions, yes, no, whatever you want to screen them, eliminate the candidates that don't match, and quickly find the right person fast, sometimes within a day or two. ZipRecruiter. It's a new year, a new start for your business, and a great year starts with making great hires. Look at the million-plus companies, some of the biggest companies in the world who use ZipRecruiter, and our little company, too. You post once, watch the candidates roll in. No more juggling emails, no more calls to office. ZipRecruiter.com. Try it free right now. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. We thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. Hey, let me tell you, those Elmer Fudd hats, they don't come cheap. They do not come cheap. Philip Elmer.
$150.
What? For the one you're wearing?
Yeah, $150.
Oh, but that's real leather.
In Northampton. Yeah, it's real leather.
Oh, you got it in Northampton.
Yeah.
Oh. This one was about $4.
You're left out.
Yeah.
All I have over here is a tribble.
Oh, that's nice. You could wear that.
That's cool.
Does that multiply? Because that would be cool. No. That looks like my hairpiece that I was wearing. Actually.
A little fuzzy.
Does it make a sound?
It does, but I think the battery is dead.
Actually,
William Shatner gave.
William Shatner gave you that tribble?
Well, we used it for a segment. We were interviewing at the 50th. Oh, here we go. It's purring. He's this Tribble is having a little bit of a seizure, I think, Brent. But
did Tribbles make sounds? I don't think they did. Did they?
Yeah, oh, yeah, they did. Would pet it, like, they would make a cooing.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Wait a minute. William Shatner gave you that Tribble?
Well, we were using it for a second. I interviewed him for the 50th anniversary Star Trek in New York City, and
wow,
and talked. Yeah, we had a great time. He's
funny.
And
he seems
he's
like
very,
he
very nice.
Yeah.
And he's so down to earth, and you know, you can just roll with stuff, and yeah, we had a good time. We talked about some of his upcoming book, and you know, we talked a lot about Leonard Nimoy, and that troubled relationship. I thought he was really open about that to me. He said, you know, as men, you know, it's hard. Sometimes you've got guy friends, you kind of go in a phase where you're close, and then you fall out of favor. You kind of screw things up, you kind of get back together. And he's like, but he was always that friend. And, you know, it was interesting. Yeah. Good guy.
Yeah. Wow. That's a great scoop. So Campbell Brown, you know Campbell Brown? You must know Campbell Brown. Small fraternity.
Yeah. I mean, in the TV world, but not terribly closely, but I've met her and have a lot of friends close to her. Yeah. So she's going to be heading up this Facebook operation. The New York Times broke this story about, you know, leading this new sort of news partnership team. Although I don't know how really involved she'll be. It seems like more of a public face, but trying to maybe obviously the big pushback and all the meetings that took place with Zuckerberg and a lot of friends who were in those meetings with him right after where there was a feeling that conservative news was not giving a place on in Facebook's news feed, that there was people on their editorial staff maybe removing stories, all of that. So I think this is a push in that direction. She's not going to be in charge of any content or have any editorial control at all. But she's going to work with connecting publishers to partners. You know, look, a lot of these publishers, for crying out loud, the majority of their traffic comes from Facebook, overwhelmingly. Nothing is even close to the traffic that Facebook provides for them in the news feed. And so their business is basically run on Facebook. And if some small tweak to the algorithm happens, it affects their bottom line.
Facebook really is a publisher, as much as they have said, denied that they really are. I think it's interesting though. They didn't hire Campbell Brown in the same way that Yahoo hired Katie Couric. She's not going to be doing news,
right?
She's just kind of an evangelist, I guess, for the news product.
Can I ask a question about it? Because what you describe, the issue that the publishers are having, where they basically handed over to Facebook access to their subscribers. They don't, you know, the real important thing for a publisher is to have a direct contact with the subscriber, and you have their email address and you can market to them. Facebook has inserted itself in there, and they've actually lost a lot of power, the publishers have. But the issue of the conservatives feeling like they weren't getting enough, their voice wasn't being expressed in Facebook feels ironic.
I know.
Now that it turns out,
I guess the election
may have been tipped by, you know, the red bubble and the blue bubble not listening to each other, to the point where Mark Zuckerberg first laughed it off as ridiculous that it might have happened, and to come around to, oh, you know, we may have some responsibility for the way the election turned out. Do you know where in those three events where Campbell Brown is going to fit in?
It's hard to say. I mean, it seems like. I know what you're getting at. I don't know. I mean, because if she's not going to be in charge of content at all, she's not going to be in charge of editorial at all. And there has been this move recently, obviously, to remove fake news from the feed, that all these fake news stories were getting voted up to the top of the news feed. So in an effort, I guess, to be the public face of that, she'll be the public damage control, I guess. When in 6 months we have another Facebook story, who are you going to see on all of the network newscasts answering this question for Facebook? Campbell Brown will be out in front on this saying no. In fact, it was the algorithm in some human curation of these stories in an effort to keep this stuff out of the mainstream media.
It's really a PR job.
Right. That's what it seems like. Yeah. And sort of helping bridge that gap. And by putting, a conservative, she's a conservative, by putting a conservative voice in Facebook to bridge that gap, I think Zuckerberg takes this seriously. I think there was a lot of pushback from the conservative media when this all was unfolding back in the fall. But to your point, I mean, look what happened, right? I mean, an overwhelming response. And a lot of people believe that Donald Trump won the election because of Facebook in large part, not only from his ads and the way that they were able to gather these smaller donations and drive the narrative on Facebook, showing up in these small towns and being able to get the message out about it. Facebook was one of the reasons that pushed him over the edge significantly. So,
I don't think it was fake news at all.
He is probably the largest media provider in the world.
I don't think it was fake news at all. I think it was really an
entirely new and strange frontier. We're already seeing in the past few weeks all these changes to their video algorithm. Right. And you've been noticing the way in which videos are showing up differently now in the news feed. The way in which you can interact with videos in the news feed is different. I also think it's incumbent upon these publishers, though, to not whine in their own soup, because they have the opportunity to be doing and providing great content and then gathering up their own audience on their own, being able to gather email addresses and market directly to those people on their website by providing value. And now Facebook is enabling them to gather that information right with a new feature called Leads that they just rolled out not too long ago. So in the Facebook news, in the Facebook ads manager, being able to use that feature called Leads, so you can gather leads directly. That was an answer to this exact issue from publishers, being able to gather email addresses and market to people. So Facebook's listening to publishers' complaints.
They've kicked me off.
What?
Well, I used to promote individual stories. You can spend $9 and a story that might get a few dozen viewers.
Yeah, they always ask me, "Would you like to promote that? You could just promote that. Yeah. Just give some money."
So I was doing it, and I was spending hundreds of bucks a month doing it, and then suddenly, boom! I get a little with no explanation. Got a thing saying that that had been turned off. I had violated some TOS, and
that's very confusing. Facebook, buying ads,
right? And then they say, if you want to find out what's gone wrong, contact us. And
good luck.
Doesn't work. Yeah. Right? I think what happened.
Talk about a confused company. That's crazy, because they're always telling me I should be doing that.
Right. I think someone complained, and I suspect it was CNN, because I was taking CNN video and excerpting 30 seconds and posting it. And I guess that's a violation. And I'm not sure there's any way out of it. I think I'm permanently banned from spending money on their ad business. And,
I'm going to tell you something.
That's okay.
That's a good thing.
Because I was looking at how many subscribers I got through that. And it was zero.
It didn't work. I think there's smart money spent on Facebook and there's dumb money spent on Facebook. And what I was saying, and I think you couldn't hear me, Clayton, so you put on the regular headphones. Can you hear me now? Now I can't hear you. So there we go. Now you're working. So what I was saying while you were and I apologize for interrupting you, but I'll say it now. I have come to the conclusion that fake news had nothing to do with it one way or the other. I know that was a big issue and blah, blah, blah. And fake news is just a generally problem on the internet. There's a lot of, conspiracy theories and nonsense on the internet. That's not particularly a problem of worse on Facebook than anywhere else. But I do think what Trump did very well was use Facebook ads very well and Facebook targeting very well, brilliantly, so much so that I've come to the opinion that the kind of thing you were doing, Philip, is the dumb money people spend on Facebook. Yeah. And I'm sure they're glad to accept that until you, break some rule. But the smart money that's spent on Facebook is very savvy. And that Jared Kushner and the San Antonio operation they had down there with Cambridge Analytica, they used it in a way, such a canny way, that it really establishes a whole new precedent for how Facebook can be used for advertising.
And I apologize. I think I was saying something similar to that, and maybe I had an audio issue here. But I think the fake news thing is, who cares? The real story was Donald Trump's leveraging of Facebook ads. That
exactly.
was the real story.
Exactly.
And my audio dropped out.
Maybe I'm agreeing with you. And anyway, that's good. Good.
Yeah, but like showing up to these events and being able to like target, micro-target these areas and get that message out. I think the fake news thing is, you know, that was a small portion of this. Right. And those who wanted to believe those stories were already voting a certain way anyway. Right. But being able to leverage those ads, micro-targeting, there is no better. I mean, I do a lot with this. There is no better ad platform. And, you know, being able to, like I said, giving the power of the publishers this idea of leads and being able to generate now in the ads manager leads and all of these things, being able to retarget. So if someone watches 25% of a video that you publish, being able to run an ad to those people as a warm audience, being able to run then ads to people who watch 50% of one of your ads videos, 75% of one of your videos. So imagine rolling a campaign ad out and someone watches 75% of that video and it's 5 minutes long. Well, that tells you a lot about the type of person who sat through most of that video. Now maybe run a separate ad to that person and then I can dive a little bit more deeply. So there's power in local businesses. But I think for publishers too, who just stop whining about it and actually realize how to leverage this platform. You know, ultimately Facebook doesn't want you they don't want you putting up clickbaity things that drive you off of the platform and have a bad experience, because it reflects poorly on them. They want you to spend as much time as possible inside of Facebook. So I think Zuckerberg is taking this seriously, and he doesn't want any news publisher complaining about the way in which their content is being perceived. If he has these meetings with them and he's taking it seriously. So I think this Campbell Brown thing is Zuckerberg realizing like the power that he wields at this point. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying I think he realizes he's the biggest publisher in the world.
Of course, the other story is that how much Facebook and Google are going to eat the ad dollar going forward. I wonder why any advertiser savvy enough to use Google and Facebook and to really target their advertising and to shape their advertising for different sectors and different niches would want to use mass media advertising at all, or even podcast advertising. These guys are going to swallow the earth with their advertising platform. I worry.
How do you see that working out? Explain that.
Well, I think it requires, and the good news is, don't tell anybody I said this, but advertisers and agencies aren't the swiftest people in the world, and they're also not the early adopters, so they're maybe a little slow to adopt this. But I think what you're seeing is that somebody savvy enough at, like Jared Kushner and Trump were, to really work Facebook, can get he spent a fraction of what Clinton spent and was able to be much more effective than broadcast media ads by being very smart with his Facebook ads. I think Google gives you some of the same kind of targeting and probably works just as well. Both Google and Facebook, by the way, ad sales taken off. And I think it's just a matter of time before you start to see them go up as other media, broadcast media in particular, goes down. Now, there'll still be, good news. Pepsi doesn't have any way to target its advertising, so they're still going to buy, Super Bowl ads. But I think increasingly, as advertisers and agencies get smart, they're going to really demand this kind of very fine slicing of the audience.
You're right. Absolutely. I think the riches are in the niches, right? That's why you're
seeing
it.
Ooh, I like it.
The power of these podcasts, like when I launched mine, I wanted it to be very specific. It wasn't broad,
right.
Very specific, and then that audience, even if it's smaller, is very specific. And then the advertisers that are willing to come on for that very specific niche. And that's the power of Facebook advertising. Look, if you're a small business, for crying out loud, listening right now, and you've got like a small ice cream shop or you're a chiropractor in a town, I mean, why are you not on Facebook leveraging that in that one zip code or those two zip codes, being able to run video ads, small, inexpensive 30, 40, 2 minute video ads, just talking, not even ads necessarily, but running videos and then boosting posts and then running ads later about your chiropractic practice and just talking about, shoveling right now, it's all the heavy snow and here's how you can damage your back.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And then in that town, being able to retarget to those people in that specific town who watch those videos, offer them an incentive for a free consultation to come in. You can't do that on television.
It's amazing.
Leo, with something you said. I do think fake news was a factor. I mean, I could list 20 factors that tipped what was really a very close election.
It's very complex.
And I think probably the fact that he could tweet and then everybody in the media would then, you know, write about it was probably a bigger factor than whatever targeting they did in Facebook. I think Fox News played a huge role in this election, not Clayton. I've been turned off.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Philip. You can't be on the show anymore. Thank you for joining us. Goodbye. No, there we go. We got it. I'm kidding. I kid. I'm a kidder. I agree. But look, there was a masterful media strategy all around, no one can deny that Trump's use of Twitter is absolutely masterful, and in effect. With the help of fake news and a lot of other things, I think mainstream media was sidelined in this election. And, it worked. It worked. Somebody's saying, yeah, but he didn't get the popular vote. You know what? It doesn't matter. He got the right votes. He got the votes. All he needed was enough votes to get elected. He got the votes. And
But they were badly.
Didn't matter. They were all out here. I do think even the Russian hacking probably wasn't as big a factor as the use of Facebook, to be honest with you. But
yeah,
I think the FBI may have been the biggest factor. But
Comey certainly didn't hurt. It didn't hurt. Yeah. Here's the most interesting. I don't want to get in this conversation. We go this conversation too much. I'm not. It's long over. I do. Speaking of politics, though, find this very intriguing and talk about a conspiracy theory. But TechCrunch pointed this out. The Facebook rejiggering of its stock plan which was ostensibly to allow Zuckerberg and his wife Priscilla Chan to donate a lot to charity, had the side effect. And TechCrunch, John Constein, doing a great job on TechCrunch, examined the SEC documents. Turns out Zuck can continue to run Facebook while serving in government, and. The most interesting story I've heard, and the one that it probably is, highly speculative, is that Mark Zuckerberg's ultimate ambition is to become president of the United States.
Yeah, I heard that story this week. I don't know. I mean, from his comments during a speech, it seemed, I don't know. You read his comments and it seemed like a pretty big stretch, but
smart to be cagey at this point.
Right. Couldn't we see a Mark Zuckerberg presidential run in 2020. I don't know. Again, we live in an age of television. We live in an age of speeches and energy, and we're not, as Michael Douglas's character in The American President talked about, that if there were cameras around when FDR was there, would this country elect someone in a wheelchair? And the problem is Mark Zuckerberg is not a dynamic speaker. He's not great on the stage.
I bet you anything. He's going out. His plan this year in 2017 is to talk to people in 50 states. That is totally the kind of thing a candidate for president would say in 4 years before the run. The fact that he embraced religion is exactly the kind of thing you need to do if you're going to run for president in this country.
And you appoint a conservative voice to be your public face.
All right, it's a conspiracy
news
theory.
Partnership with Campbell Brown. I just don't. First of all, he doesn't need to travel anywhere. He could literally stay in his house and never leave. He's got Facebook. He can get his message out there
precisely.
Without having to do anything.
Precisely. All right, let's take it. I know it's crazy. No, you know what? There's no merit in it at all. But I just love this. I love the idea. Would you vote for him?
I like Alec Baldwin for 220.
No, I wouldn't vote for Alec Baldwin. He's a hothead. Would you vote for Zuckerberg? He's a technocrat.
No.
I don't know. I if he can't be emperor of the world, maybe it's a stepping stone. Think of the presidency as a stepping stone.
You look at these guys like Mark Zuckerberg. He's already president. I mean, he's already wields that power. Why would he want to stoop to the level of the office of the American president?
Not to mention the pay cut, right?
Right, the pay cut. But it's so – people think that it's
– No, I know why he would want to do it, though. I think I do think that Mark, whatever you think about him, cares. about a lot of things. And I think Mark wants to change the world. I really think Mark wants to change the world.
But my point is, look at somebody like Elon. Look at somebody like Mark Zuckerberg. They can wield more power and change more things. I mean, to Steve Jobs' point, by being outside of the government and being able to affect change on a global scale in ways that being the American presidency is constitutionally limited. It's really limited office.
People no, in fact, Obama said it's the power to persuade more than anything else.
Right. That's what, historians and constitutional scholars would talk about. So the office of the presidency is the power to persuade, and that's really it.
Let's take a break, and we will come back with more Philip Elmer DeWitt from PED3.0.com. Actually, I shouldn't say 3.0 because that would add a dot. So it's PED3.0.com.
And I bought a bunch of other domains. I bought Apple30.co, Apple30.net. I tried to buy Apple30.com, but it was owned by someone in Iran who was willing to sell it to me, but there's no way to send money to Iran. So it's sitting there.
You see?
Unused.
These sanctions hurt even the little people. also from Fox and Friends, our good friend Clayton Morris, tech guru, tech writer, podcaster, and journalist. Actually, I do want to talk about a big anniversary tomorrow. Is a massive anniversary. We'll talk about that in a second. Stamps.com, our sponsor today. Now, there's one thing that the U.S. government does very well. Every weekday, and Saturdays too, a uniformed employee of the federal government comes to your door. Did you know that? Sometimes they stop on the street and delivers you mail. Mail is still huge. But one thing that they haven't really worked out too well, the lines at the post office. So I want to show you how you can use the power of the post office, but not go to the post office. Stamps.com. Stamps.com is amazing. It lets you buy and print real U.S. postage without a postage meter, without a trip to the post office ever. You just go to Stamps.com and you can print it with your printer and your computer. More than that, with this USB scale, we'll show you how to get that for free. You get exactly the right postage. Stamps.com suggests the various ways you can mail it. It says, hey, this might be a lot cheaper if you want media mail, that kind of thing. They even fill out forms. Stamps.com will fill out forms for you, customs forms, express mail forms. They'll do it all for you right from the website. So if you're a seller on Etsy or Amazon or eBay, if you send out mail for your business, if you send out brochures or bills, you've got to have Stamps.com. We've had it for years. This is a great resolution to make for your new year. Maximize every minute, every dollar for your small business with Stamps.com. How much time do you waste going to the post office, driving, finding parking? This is crazy. You don't need that. You actually, a uniformed employee of the federal government will come to your door and pick up your mail. How about that? Stamps.com. You can do everything you do at the post office right from your desk. Right now, we got a special deal. You go to Stamps.com. Click that microphone in the upper right-hand corner and use the offer code TWIT when it asks you. Oh, you see the nice microphone? I love that. TWIT. You're going to get a $110 bonus offer. It includes that scale, that USB scale. It includes $55 in free postage. It includes a supply kit and, of course, 30 days free, a four-week trial of Stamps.com. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Don't spend another minute at the post office. Before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in TWIT. By the way, I don't think I'm dissing the Postal Service. I love it. The Postal Service loves Stamps.com. That's why they give you discounts that you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com. Just make sure you use the offer code TWIT. You'll be doing me a favor. We're going to take a break, come back with more of Philip Elmer DeWitt, Clayton Morris. But first, this was a big week for us. It was a little quiet around the studio because the whole gang went down to CES for our CES coverage. Take a look at what you might have missed.
Previously on TWIT.
I've waited all my life to meet this man in person. To me, this is a human being. That's it.
Yeah. Of all the people I've ever met, Dickie D is one of them.
TWIT live specials.
It's loud. There's a lot of energy, and I'm on top of an RV with a jacuzzi and a helicopter. I'm Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit, and here's the best of CES.
Security Now.
The first story is the Internet of Tattling Things. A man was found dead. The suspect in his home had an Amazon Echo. Amazon received a warrant requesting any information that the Echo might have picked up and that Amazon had on their servers.
Twit. Say hello to the NSA. They're listening.
It's very easy to pair to your phone. Boss's AirPods. Boss is my name. I tell Siri to call me Boss, so that's why they call him Boss. Sometimes when you're around a therapist, you worry that everything you say is somehow horribly revealing.
We're not on all the time.
Like, so you're not thinking, oh, clearly he has authority issues because he made his phone call him Boss. You're not saying that.
No.
No. I know you're saying that. It's okay. Great week up ahead. Megan Maroney, what'll you be covering on TNT this week?
Thanks, Leo. Here is a look at just a few of the stories we'll be watching in the week ahead. CES has come and gone, but the product announcements have not. HTC sent out invites to an event this week prominently featuring the letter U, which has some rumor mongers saying the company will release its flagship HTC Ocean Note as the HTC U Ultra. Also on January 12th, Nintendo will finally unveil the Switch, a hybrid console for your living room or for you to bring with you to a cocktail party if you attend cocktail parties where you don't feel like a total weirdo playing The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild on your portable Nintendo. We will learn about the game, including pricing, games, and availability at a Nintendo press conference this week. In search news this week, on January 10th, Google will start punishing sites that try to annoy us with pop-ups. According to the official Google Webmaster Central blog, pages that use intrusive interstitials may not rank as highly in search. And finally, this week is the North American Auto Show in Detroit, where we expect to see VW's new autonomous electric concept car and Google Waymo's self-driving Chrysler Pacifica minivan. Jason Howell and I will cover all of this and a whole lot more all week on Tech News Today, each and every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Megan. Now we continue with This Week in Tech, Clayton Morris, Philip Elmer DeWitt. How about this story? Tomorrow, January 9th, 10 years ago, Steve Jobs announces a widescreen iPod, an internet communicator, and a phone. All three in one. You both must have been at that event, right?
I wasn't. I was in New York. Were you there, Clayton?
No, I wasn't.
What?
I wasn't. I missed it. I know. So sad.
It is one of the great moments in tech history, right? And we all knew that he was going to announce an iPhone. We didn't know the name. And he still kind of fooled us. I got to find that video. Let's see if I can find the video because it's...
I changed jobs after he did it. I left Time Magazine and went to San Francisco to cover Apple.
Did you?
On a daily basis.
You saw something big happening.
Well, finally, yeah. It had been a long time. I used to be the tech editor, and there would be guys in San Francisco pitching Apple stories at the end of the Gil Emilio era.
Ugh.
And I just didn't see it. I didn't see Apple pulling it together.
That was a bad time, But here you go. Here's Steve Jobs.
In 2001, we introduced the first iPod.
Actually, maybe I'll jump ahead a little bit.
And... It didn't just...
I was sitting right about there.
It didn't just change the way we all listen
next
to music.
Next to Scott Bourne.
It changed the entire music industry.
Merlin Mann, Alex Lindsay, we were all sitting there.
Today, we're introducing three revolutionary products of this class.
I get chills still, don't you?
Yeah. The first one is a widescreen iPod with touch controls.
Now, you know, you're in the press, so you're trying not to applaud, but it's hard not to get excited.
Did you know where he was going with this?
Well, we suspected an iPhone. I did not know where he was going with this.
Yeah, because you're thinking to yourself, okay, wait a second.
Yeah, you're going, what?
What's happening here? This misdirection is perfect.
This guy's a brilliant showman. Brilliant.
Yeah. Is a revolutionary mobile phone.
That's the thing we were waiting for. We thought, oh, he's got three things. You never knew with Steve, right?
And the third is a breakthrough internet communications device.
We're like, oh, okay, great.
Three things.
Tell me about number two. Tell me about number two. Yeah.
Three things. A widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device. An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. An iPod, a phone.
Now we're getting it.
Are you getting it?
Yes.
These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone.
No one even knew what they were going to call it.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone. And here it is.
And, of course, a little joke there. It's an iPod with a dial on it.
No.
That's also, you know what? That takes some guts.
Actually, here it is, but we're going to leave it there for now.
Oh, it's in his pocket.
So, that is
amazing stagecraft.
Did you see the leaked Verge stuff? The images and video from on the Verge with the click wheel iPhone prototype that they built and
they
what
did.
It looked like with the software face.
They
so,
did. But that's where.
About it, but it was there.
But that's where you see Steve Jobs right saying, "Oh, that's no, we're not doing that." I have to say, he's missed. He really has missed. And even as exciting as that moment was, and we were all just, you know, champing at the bit to get to hear about this new phone, even then we had no idea how important this product was going to be.
Right. And the three things he named, one of them, it's actually not a very good phone, but the internet communicator part of it turned out to be the breakthrough. That's what really took off.
Yeah, you're right.
Safari. I mean,
you picked the wrong thing to put in the name, obviously. Who cares about the phone nowadays? But at the time, it was replacing cell phones, right?
Yeah.
And it was one of those things, improving the phone component of the iPhone took years to nail down.
Well, and you've got to read the amazing stories by the engineers we now know who are sitting in that audience taking a shot. Every time the demo, one item in the demo worked, they're part of the demo work. They go, oh, thank God. Because apparently, first of all, that thing in his pocket, there were only two of them. They didn't work very well. And they had the second one in case the first one just died. And Jobs had to follow a very narrow path in the demo. One mistake, the thing would crash.
Yeah, it was like he had to follow that golden path. And if it didn't, the whole thing was done. The whole demo was done.
But again, a testament to this man's incredible ability. I mean, all of this, he knows all of this. This could go very wrong. And yet, man, he had such mastery of the room. I mean, pretty amazing. It's fascinating to learn later how difficult. This is the click wheel prototype that came from Sonny Dixon, who is a well-known Apple leaker. I think this is kind of funny. And he also says there's a patent from 2006 that shows this. You know, some Apple employee obviously had this video, leaked it.
Right, and be able to scroll through the scroll wheel and go through new messages and phone. And
it's interesting, the Acorn logo there. I don't know what's – I don't know. Acorn was the inspiration for ARM, remember? That was the Acorn computer that ARM – was created for in conjunction with Apple. Apple was one of the owners of ARM. Really interesting. I'm glad they didn't do this, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm sad I didn't get to see that live, but to be able to watch that so many times. And then I did get to see the iPad launch live. You
know, that was the last one I saw.
Right. <Yeah. laughs> We're streaming live right now.
You know, help a brother out here, Clayton. I'm sitting in the auditorium. You guys, CNN, everybody's got cameras. They're going like this. I'm a little podcaster. I got a laptop. I thought, I'll just turn it around. I got a camera in the thing. I'll just stream it.
Right.
Nobody said, by the way, this is all speculation. Nobody ever said anything then, has ever said anything since. And in my opinion, I shouldn't bring this up because as soon as Apple opens a spaceship campus and has their first event in that spaceship campus, I'm going to be on my knees begging for an invitation. to that event.
Or you'll be flying over with a new drone that you've built.
Yeah. Well, I am also very grateful that I saw Steve Jobs at his peak, at his finest. And I think that iPhone is clearly, that announcement is clearly amazing. 10 years ago
I missed a beat there, Leo. They kicked you. They don't invite you.
Oh, you don't know the story? Everybody that watches Twitter knows. So, no, that was the last time I got invited to an Apple event was that iPad event. And I've always had the hypothesis because, first of all, I'm in the official Apple video sitting here with my chin on my laptop streaming it. So, busted. And I do think Steve gave me the stink eye at one point. I'm not absolutely certain, but I think he looked at me and went, and then looked and went on. So I was like right there. So, and then I never got invited again. So that's my thesis. And so we all know that there is a blacklist for sure. And many people have been on that blacklist. But even Gizmodo gets to go to Apple events again. They're the ones who were blocked for years.
You should try. Write a note to Steve Dowling. He'll let you in.
I'll get in. I just have to ask. I don't think that I'm really on the blacklist. I think I just... I just have to ask.
You fell off the list.
I fell off the list. There's a big difference.
Yeah, it's not like you stole an iPhone and published stories about
and a leaked
iPhone
from a bar. And that's what Gizmodo did. They're right. Invited. Christina Warren is on their list. Apple did have a good holiday season. 44% of all device activations, according to people who monitor this thing, not Apple.
Yeah, although that was down from 49% the year before, so it wasn't quite the... I mean, Samsung is gaining on Apple every year, and in the graph you're showing there, the year before, Samsung was at 19% and Apple was at 49%.
Okay. This is from Flurry. Flurry monitors this kind of thing, and I think because their analytics are actually culled from apps, they're pretty accurate.
They're actually called, if you sign up for Flurry, they get to look at every receipt that gets emailed to
you. That's what it is. It's like Slice. Yeah. That's right. There's another company that does the apps. Is it Adobe? Somebody else does apps. Right. Flurry is monitoring your shipments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to see how much of those holiday sales in general from Apple were Apple Watch. I saw a lot of people at the local Apple store gathered around using their Christmas money afterwards buying Apple Watches. Be curious to see how much. I wish we knew those numbers, but we don't get to see
those
numbers.
Tim said it was the best 3 days ever for Apple Watch. Huge growth. And I think they dropped the price $100 on the Series 1, and I think that might have helped. At $259, that's at that point, maybe it's something people would consider if they've been waiting to get one. He said, the AirPods are a runaway success. We're making them as fast as we can. That we know.
I know. I tweeted this, Apple tells CNBC nothing new.
Yeah, right. we know you're making them as fast as you can. The question is, how fast can you make them? In fact, we have heard rumors from the supply chain that Apple's actually going to cut iPhone production by as much as 10%.
This is CNET from CES 2017, and here are the stories that matter.
I don't even see where this news is coming from. I don't even see the video that's playing. Thank you, CNET. Knock it off.
That 10% cut was another story that I thought just got played completely wrong. Last year, the same people, the Nikkei Asian Review, reported that Apple was going to cut production by 30%. And that turned out to be right. And it presaged a terrible second quarter and the beginning of that year that, cost Tim Cook 15% of his bonus. But this year it fell 10%, which is a lot less than 30%.
That's a good point.
So it was actually a good news for Apple, but it got played as bad news because that's what people click on.
Well, and there's that's also there's ways to interpret it also. Maybe they made enough.
Yeah.
And
also every after the December quarter is the big quarter. Right. They always reduce their orders after the December quarter.
And they might have a weird story. They crank them out so fast that there's not been a supply problem. So maybe that's it,
And people forget that what Tim Cook prides himself on, he has this weird sort of idiosyncrasy. I mean, he's so steeped in spreadsheets and what stores have what items left on shelves. And he's obsessed with the idea that not having an excess of supply in a right. back room somewhere that doesn't need to be there? Is there a possible where we can get to that zero mark?
Right.
We don't have
just in time. Exactly.
Just in time. Yeah. Zero. Can I get into that nice little gray area between having too much and not enough? And will people be happy or will we hear griping about it? You see that every time one of these new products is rolling out, Apple TV starts to dry up on store shelves. So he, under Steve Jobs' reign, Tim Cook was very much in control of making sure that as those things were drying up, the new products were starting to right. proliferate.
Huge app sales, too, right? For the App Store recorded. How much was the App Store sales? Oh, was there 44 billion? Or, no, I can't be right. $28 billion. $28 billion. Is that right? Yeah. In the App Store, Apple collected a third of that, which is $8.5 billion in 2016. That's a growth of 40% year over year.
All Mario Run.
Yeah, probably. Right. Probably.
You needed to download it on 5 devices. You had to pay 5 times.
Oh, the record day was January 1st of this year.
Which is a funny day.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear your theory, but $240 million in purchases, that's the largest single-day sales in App Store history. $250 million. What's the story? Why are people buying them New Year's Day?
Everything's closed on New Year's Day.
Oh, that's all you can do.
Right.
Got to play that Pokemon Go. I guess a lot of people got iPhones for Christmas.
Right.
It's right. a Sunday. It's a week later.
You'd think it would be the day after Christmas that all the apps would get bought. It is. It's a bit of a mystery, and we don't. They didn't report what happened in all the days around January 1st. Right. Just that happened to be the peak.
Right. I'm very excited about another announcement at CES. We've been waiting for Samsung to confirm the Chromebook Pro. We'd seen leaks of it and the Chromebook Plus. What is interesting is that it's not merely a Samsung product. Apparently, made in partnership directly with Google. Which would answer the question: what's going to replace Google's Chromebook Pixel? It might be this, much less expensive than Chromebook Pixel, but still expensive for a Chromebook starting at $450. I immediately ordered the Plus, which is the ARM version. That will be available first at Best Buy and supposedly in about a month. I will get it.
They sell so many of these into schools. They're really eating Apple's lunch.
And not just Apple, Microsoft. Although, they're completely replacing Windows machines. What's interesting is this is going to be a killer a product. It folds over, it becomes a tablet, has a pen, as Samsung's famous for their pens. But because this will support, and you can see it right here, the Play Store, this means this will be both an Android tablet and a Chromebook. And I think that's
the question comes out of software.
Yeah. That's very interesting.
And what we'll see from Apple in 10.3 for the iPad, big move. I mean, we need to see some big updates for iPad, I think. And whether or not we'll see that in the spring, maybe Apple shifts to the spring timetable for talking about iPad and relegates the fall to iPhone. But I think it comes down to software, as it does with this Chromebook. Where are those really killer apps that make you want to stay on an iPad or a Chromebook with a pencil?
Yeah.
These enterprise-level apps, these pro-level apps that I'd love to see on the iPad Pro. I mean, that's my main computer now. Sitting here talking iMac, but I run my whole company on this little guy.
That's Apple's hope, I believe, is that they really want the iPad to eventually take over for the MacBook and the Macintosh and become its primary computer.
And it's the reason why pro users, pro Mac users think that Tim Cook doesn't understand, know what the pro users need. Yeah,
this Surface Studio, is exactly what pro users were hoping Apple would do something as innovative as this. And incidentally, sales on this are tiny, 30,000 apparently, according to some sources. Nothing like Apple Mac sales. And yet, even at CES this week, all these interesting, innovative, unique PC form factors, much faster laptops, much more better battery life, no touch bar. Nobody in the world is making a touch bar but Apple. And I think for good reason. That thing is a
What do you like your touch bar, Philip? Do you have one?
I don't have one. I'm still using my MacBook Air.
Don't get one.
I like my ports.
I like my ports. I also like my touch, and I guess that's one of the reasons I think iOS is ultimately going to eclipse MacBook.
Yeah, the touch bar.
Touch bar's terrible.
I use it once in a while. I more use it for Touch ID than anything.
Yeah, the fingerprint's great. I love the fingerprint. But by the way, I don't know if you've experienced this yet, but I'm now making more typos because I accidentally hit the touch bar all the time, and Siri pops up or my search spotlight pops up, and I'm trying to do something here and get out of my way, and this has become an anti-productivity tool. I'm not happy with it.
Do you use it when you're writing? Do the right words show up in advance so you don't have to type them?
But, Philip, you're a touch typist. You don't look at the keyboard.
Yeah. It's true.
And then to glance up and do the autocorrect or to pick those, it's like an extra level. It's an extra step. I mean, I do like there are certain apps, certain third-party apps I think you're taking advantage of. Like I love Airmail. I use Airmail on my iPad. I use Airmail on my iPhone. That's my go-to mail application now mostly. And they updated for touch bar support. And there's some cool bells and whistles inside of that app. So when you're living in an app for a while and you can then customize and experience touch bar inside of that app, that's when I think it becomes compelling. Like if, for instance, you're living inside of Photoshop and you're going to be doing certain things inside of Photoshop for a long time, that's when I think it becomes compelling. To me, I forget about it because I'm jumping between apps so often. Right. And it takes on a new skin every time I'm jumping between apps. And it's unpredictable, and I don't remember where things are. And now there's a whole new layout every time. It comes back to what I was talking about before, memory of keyboard shortcuts or gestures on earbuds. You got to get used to these things, and I'm just not used to it.
No.
I would love to see some sales numbers to know whether they're selling more of the MacBook Pro without the strip than they sell with the strip. We won't get that.
Well, unfortunately, if you want the high-end MacBook Pro, you've got to get the Touch Bar. The one I tell people, get the one if you can live with the one without it. It's absolutely better. But if you want the faster processor, battery life's still an issue. It's unpredictable. That's the worst, right? If it were short, I could live with it, but it's not. It's long and short. It's all over the place.
Are you reacting to the Consumer Reports?
No, I have one. I've been using it. I bought it right away, and I hate it. I would be so much happier with a modern MacBook Pro on the old design. And frankly, the same thing of the Mac Pro. I'd have been much happier with a cheese grater on the old design. It'd have been much more useful. I could upgrade it. I could put more drives in it. In terms of Macintosh, I don't think Apple's doing a very good job.
No invitation for you, Leo.
You see, I blew it every time. Let me talk about my mattress, then we'll wrap this thing up here. Our show today brought to you by Casper. A incredible retailer of online mattresses, premium mattresses at a price, rock bottom price. Why? They don't have showrooms. They don't need showrooms. Your house is the showroom. So you can't really tell if you're going to like a mattress by going to, the mattress store and lying there in broad daylight with a salesperson looking at you. You got shoes on. Oh, yeah, this is nice. Honey, what do you think? Oh, yeah, I guess it's okay. And then you buy a mattress. It's happened to me every day. Every time I buy a mattress, you get it home and it goes, Yeah, not with the Casper. I love my Casper, but if you didn't, if after 100, any time in the first 100 days you said, you call them up, they send a courier, they take it away, they refund you every penny. They want you to try the mattress in your house the way you should try a mattress. Caspers are made of supportive memory foams for a sleep surface, memory foam with just the right sink, just the right bounce. It's breathable design. It keeps cool, regulates your temperature, never is hot, smells sweet, it's comfortable, and you buy it risk-free at a great price. I don't know what I could do to tell you, to convince you, you got to try this. We got one for our guest room. I bought one for my son in college because it was affordable. It comes in a compact box. He's on like the third floor. He can easily get it up there, open it up. I told him he's a senior. He's had it for a couple of years. I said, just leave it. The next guy will really appreciate the Casper mattress. We'll get you one for the new place. Casper, it's awesome. Get a Casper mattress today and save $50 on the mattress purchase by going to casper.com/twit. Use the promo code DWIT. Twit.
Love it.
Do you have a Casper?
Oh, yeah. We have a Casper. And I just bought my mom and dad a Casper for Christmas. Aww. They've been wanting a new king-size bed. They've been living in a queen bed forever. And so got a little picture of a mattress. My mom said, what's this for Christmas?
That's so cute.
Said, just pick the one you want. She said, I want a Casper. So I got her a king-size. And they do the frame as well. So we did the frame.
Oh, that's
did
so
the mattress.
Cute.
They have a foundation. So just ordered it. It should be there this week. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Unsolicited testimonial.
Unsolicited. Love it. Love it.
Casper.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT for $50 off. Terms and conditions apply. You will love your Casper mattress. Let's see. Wrap it up. I don't think you would ever do this on Fox and Friends. Those guys across the street, CNN, wanted to show what hacking looked like, so they picked a screenshot from Fallout 4. That's embarrassing. It only took a minute or two for Reddit to figure out that's not hacking. That's a game, a mini game inside Fallout 4.
Oh, you know, I feel bad.
I'm sure you're sympathetic because this is hard.
I'm sympathetic because here's what it is, right? Oftentimes, and think about the producers, the poor producers who are 23 years old, 22 years old, you know, right? They're there at like 1 a.m.
Exactly.
They're not, you know, not making any money. They do like a Google image search or something for hacking, and they end up pulling up, you know, an image from Fallout 4, and that's what they use on the show. And then, you know, look, yes, there should be extra layers and hoops and hurdles to jump through on this, but I'm sympathetic. I'm sympathetic. The amount of mistakes I make in a 4-hour show, you know, these kinds of things are bound to happen.
I know, and I'm just teasing them. But I have to say, you know, part of the problem is that you're trying to illustrate abstract concepts in a visual medium, and it is the hardest thing in the world. I mean, you know, how do you do a visual of hacking? Well, you got characters on a screen. What else are you going to do, right?
They all try to come up with these creative ways to show things in television because you're right. It's a visual medium. You're getting your kids ready for school. You're making pancakes and you're looking up on the TV and you're trying to illustrate something. I remember years ago, TV anchor had, and this was actually kind of brilliant, but like had one of those forklift style bucket raising, you know, devices you would stand in to go up and fix whatever, a telephone.
Oh, that was funny. I saw that.
To illustrate the amount of snowfall, right? Inside, this is how high the snowfall has been this year. But actually, it was really smart. Like, here's an idea, you know, and you could, they held a measuring tape down. So, look, you know, you got to come
whatever
up with all
it
kinds
takes.
Of crap. Yeah, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. Samsung actually is weird. Interesting. These are just a little, you know, the seeds and the stems that fall to the bottom of the show. Samsung forecasts a record fourth quarter profit, the best in 3 years, even despite the Note 7 debacle. It did very well. We are going to find out in a week or two what happened with the Note 7, by the way. They're going to release the results of its investigation. I'll be very interested to see what that is.
Probably fueled by the sale of washing machines, and, you know.
Yeah. It's a big company. I mean, mobile isn't the only thing they're up to. Yeah.
Well, I'd love to know what's going on with, you know, their gear, with the S3 stuff floating around. You know, what are they going to do with Android Wear and the gear watches?
I want to see a Note 8. Maybe they don't call it the Note, but they got to release it. The Note 7 was a great phone. All, you know, little hiccup. But it was a really nice phone. I would like to be using it today. I really would. Russia requires Apple and Google to remove LinkedIn from app stores. Now, ostensibly, this is because there's a Russian law requiring that networking services store data on Russian citizens in Russia, which doesn't seem unreasonable. It also seems like it makes it easier for them to spy on their citizens. In any event,
something in China.
Yeah,
with their databases in China that they have state control over. So we know exactly what you're up to, how many children you have, what websites you run.
LinkedIn is now owned by Microsoft, and they said they were disappointed. We didn't talk about the Russian hacking story because I hate to say it, but the joint agency report, the JAR report on Russian hacking was such a mishmash of useless information that I don't think we can say anything with intelligence. This is Kevin Polson's really great article. We're going to get Kevin on very soon to talk about it. Kevin is a hacker,
So he knows what he's talking about. He's writing for the Daily Beast now. How the U.S. hobbled its hacking case against Russia and enabled truthers. The truth is, according to Kevin, there is useful information about Russian hacking that might confirm the intelligence agency's report. But none of that made it into the joint report, the JAR. And in fact, the stuff in the JAR was worse than useless. It was actually dangerous. They offered, for instance, according to Kevin in the report, hundreds of IP addresses that were, let me find that part of the piece here, that were tied to dangerous Russian hacking groups. The problem is that of the, 800, there it is, the 876 addresses that they offered, 40% were Tor exit nodes, which anybody could use. They aren't tied to anybody, and they aren't particularly located in Russia. And worse, a number of them were Yahoo email servers. And we know what happened there because a Vermont utility got this 876 internet IP addresses, did what the Department of Homeland Security said it should do, which was to scan all of its computers for access to any of these internet addresses. Oh, my God, they found a laptop that had accessed one of these addresses. It got in the news that the Vermont utility had been hacked by the Russians. The laptop had accessed Yahoo email.
Right. There was no sign that it had been hacked.
No sign that it had been hacked.
Right.
I think they did them. They did them themselves. I can only think that the intelligence agencies offered this really There's two ways you can go with this. I'm going to go with a way that they didn't want to reveal operational security and methods, but they should never have released a report that was so clearly made up. The other way you can go is that it's propaganda from the intelligence agencies, and that they're just that this is bullshit. I'm sorry.
I think that your first take on this is probably more the case.
I hope
because
so.
We saw on Friday President-elect Trump and President Obama both having 2-hour meetings with the senior intelligence officials on Friday, and leaving those meetings, President-elect Trump was. I think his comments about it and in meetings subsequent, taking it quite seriously.
Good. Because unfolded. He's poo-pooed this all along. So,
right.
But what so he clearly saw he was presented with evidence that satisfied him.
So what he was not able to say publicly, which was all of the stuff that didn't make it into this report, is the classified stuff. We had former CIA operatives on our show who said as much as well, and that's what was handed to President Obama as well. So this public stuff, you're right, is this mishmash.
Should not have released it.
And if anything, paints a picture of the ability of third-party hackers that had nothing to do with the Russian government in any capacity. It seems like it emboldened them more, or it made the case for them more than it did the Russian government itself.
They pointed to an old publicly available PHP malware. We're actually going to on Security Now on Tuesday. Steve Gibson found it so fascinating that he wants to delve into this PHP malware. But even the malware that this joint agencies report came up with was out of date. There's much more recent malware available, widely available. Anybody wants to buy it, you can just Google it and you can download it and use it against your friends. I'm actually very disappointed because I think this is just more confusing and bad information. I recommend people check out Kevin Polson's article. If anybody knows this stuff, it's Kevin. And I think he makes a good, much better case than the JAR report made.
Yeah, it was embarrassing.
Yeah, I don't get it. So we'll kind of defer discussion of that Russian hacking till we have know something better or more useful to say. Let's see. I think anything else you guys wanted to talk about? I think we covered. I think we covered the highlights. There's certainly a lot more.
Yeah, those are the big stories out of CES.
I know you want to watch the Golden Globes. Go ahead. Go ahead. It's okay.
No. I had football on right in my office. Here. I was able to see the Packers crush the Giants. That's all I cared about.
Oh, you're a Packers fan.
No. I'm an Eagles fan. But
that's what I thought.
Anytime the Giants lose, exactly.
By the way, you can have Chip Kelly back now.
Yeah, thanks.
We're done with him.
No, thanks. I'm glad you guys had the same exact experience that we did.
Oh, my God. Ooh, okay, we won't talk football. Philip, anything else you want to mention? You're doing such a great job on PED30.com of covering the app. If people want to keep up on Apple News, and I've been doing that lately for MacBreak Weekly, I always go to PED30 to see what the big stories are, and your stuff is great. So keep up the good work. I will be listening to the new show and see what Gene Munster has to say about his new enterprise.
My volume seems to be off. Can you hear me, Leo?
Yeah, I hear you. I was just saying nice things.
Okay.
You know what? Stop. Right. Nobody should use these crappy AirPods anymore on the show.
Well, that was my microphone was.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough. The only thing I was going to add, you had a link to a lot of rumors about the next iPhone, the iPhone.
I know.
X.
And do you really want to say anything? What can we say?
I ignore most of it because I don't really care about, you know, the OLEDs and the so forth. But I think the wireless charging, if it works and if they do it right, could be a real deal breaker. The company that's been talking the most about it, whose name I forget, they've got patents for contact charging 3 to 5 feet away and 18 feet away. And we'll have to see what part of that surfaces in the next iPhone if they're going to actually do it. But the idea that you could walk into a room and your iPhone starts charging immediately is quite appealing and I think could change the game.
It would if they could make something like that. I'm a little skeptical that such a thing can work. But
And that it won't also power my pacemaker at the same time.
Yeah. You really don't want to create a room that no one can enter if they have any medical devices because that would be a problem.
Well, we'll have to see.
Why is my hip buzzing?
To not have to live in a cord-free environment would be fantastic. I mean, think about the future of the iPad in that environment. If that's your main computing device, if your iPhone is your main, you wouldn't have to ever worry about these stinking cords again and plug into anything, looking for them, forgetting them on a vacation. Well, I guess you would.
In the Android world have had wireless charging on many devices for a long time, all the Samsung devices, for instance.
But you have to have contact.
Yeah, but that's not a big deal. I put it on a stand and it charges.
But just keeping it in your pocket and never worrying about
its
charge.
That's not going to work. That can't work. You think that's actually going to happen? You can't get enough energy through the air to charge
it. Didn't Tesla do it 15 years ago?
Really?
I talked to a guy who's in the business. He's working on this very thing. It is a technology that they're working on. There's some people who claim that the physics isn't right and that it's impossible, but there's a company making them. So, and Apple
making them in such a way that you can buy it.
Not yet.
No.
What they say is that they're waiting for FCC approval. They've got approval for the contact because it's going to go through the air. The FCC has to rule on whether safe for 3 to 5 feet or 18 feet.
Yeah, Tesla in 100 years ago with his large Tesla Tower using wireless transfer of energy.
Yes.
Right, he was run out of town because the power companies were like, nope, not going to. We want to be able to control this, the Tesla's Tower, in 1904, to draw millions of volts of electricity through the air. And then feed it out to cities wireless.
I mean, I know UBeam was the company that was pushing this, and they've been kind of debunked, right?
I think Energous is the one I've been following.
All right. I will. Energous. Okay. We'll watch with interest.
Okay.
Anything you want to. Say to watch out for Clayton Morris in the weeks and days to come?
To watch out for.
Anything you're excited about? Watch for your podcast.
Oh, sure.
ClaytonMorris.com.
Yeah, if you go to MorrisInvest.com, we've got the podcast. But by the way, I just launched – you and I were talking before the show about our YouTube channel. Tried to really do a big push in October, launched the YouTube channel as well. So we're trying to push out really – just Morris and more, my last name, Morris Invest on YouTube, where we go into very niche-y pieces about how to invest in real estate and walk you through all of those different things, whether it's
everyone,
raising.
Welcome to the Morris.
Oh, there he is. There's, I know that guy, Clayton Morris.
How often do you do these?
We do these. I know I'm constantly doing them. We publish these 3 times a week also. So range in.
Wow. Now, but you only work on Fox and Friends on the weekends, right? So you just got 5 days a week. You're not doing anything.
Well, no, now I'm doing like 5 days a week. So I'm doing Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah. Good. So I'm glad to hear that. That's great. Congratulations.
So it's,
I think you should take Megyn Kelly's old show.
Too late. That's already been snacked up. Damn, not leaving that 9 o'clock hour away.
Man, they just woof. Hey, it's great to have you both on. Always a pleasure. We do. And by the way, speaking of YouTube, you can watch us live on YouTube now at youtube.com/twit. We also have our TwitBits there and links to all of our show channels. So any of the shows you want to watch, you can watch on YouTube as well as at twit.tv. Or, you know, subscribe and you'll get every show automatically pushed to your device and you won't miss an episode. I like it when you watch live, though, because then you can be in the chat room. That's about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC every Sunday afternoon. And thank God football's almost over. We don't have to fight the NFL for your attention going forward. Thanks for joining me,
everybody.
The Golden Globes. Now it's drunks on the Golden Globes. Kara Swisher, I'm sorry we couldn't get her on. I gather she didn't get her internet back. Comcast didn't act that quickly. What a surprise. But we will reschedule her and have her on a show coming up in the weeks to come. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.